Well, I think I'm going to try mine up there, and if it works, I'll we'll have another test, and we'll have another mic for public testimony. It doesn't have a clip, so I'll give you the clip on the. Why don't you use this one? We can switch out. Are we ready, Terry? Okay. Well, good evening, Homer. Glad you're here. This is the second of two House Bill 77 meetings. The last one was last night in Homer. In Soldotna. We had a pretty incredible turnout, standing room only. Lots of great discussion, lots of great public testimony. So what we have tonight is, first of all, these folks don't have to be here, but they are. And it was at my request that we have some opportunity for my constituents to ask about House Bill 77. So I'd like to start off by asking you all to give Mr. Fogles, Deputy Commissioner of Alaska DNR, Randy Bates, Director of Alaska Department of Fish and Game, Division of Habitat, David Shady, and Esther Temple. Please give them a big hand for coming down and supporting us. Like I said, they don't have to be here, but they are. There's a bill on the table, and I'll tell you where it is right now. It made it through the House. I have notes. We kind of went through this last night. I want to point out that Representative Paul Seaton is here, did not support the bill in the House. Mr. Representative, can you raise your hand for folks that haven't seen your cap? I have struggled with the bill since first reading it. You know, it went through the House fairly quickly, and I thought, can't be that bad. And we did a little research, and there were some things that made me uncomfortable, and I have to say that the department and the administration has been have engaged with me since day one on talking about some of the issues that I've had. But passed the House on the 4th of March. 23 yeses, 14 noes, 3 excused. And right now it's in the Rules Committee in the Senate. It went to third reading and went to Rules. That means that it didn't have the votes to go to the floor. And I think we all agree that there are some things that we need to deal with in House Bill 77. So here's what we did last night, what I'd like to do tonight. From 4 o'clock until they're through, the commissioners and deputy commissioner tonight has the opportunity to present the bill and why they have it on the table. When they're through, we're going to call up a couple panel members, and tonight we have Bob Shavelson from Cook Inlet Keeper, and we have Robert Ruffner from Kenai Watershed Forum. And we don't have any pros. We worked at getting some pro House Bill 77 folks here, but something about Homer and standing out in front of you and all that. But anyway, we decided that the administration can defend what they believe in about the bill, and we have some stakeholder groups here that will be asking some panel questions. While we're having the panel discussion, I want you all to feel free. When we get to public testimony, starting to get some feedback here. When we get to public testimony, you'll only have 2 minutes apiece. I'm fairly strict about that. There are a lot of people here tonight, like there was last night. So we're going to speed up. We won't need the full hour at the beginning. We won't spend a full hour on the panel discussion so that we have more time for public testimony. And last night I asked the question at the end of the bill tonight, is there anyone that wants to be heard that hasn't been? So we're not leaving until you're through. But with 2 minutes, if you have a more detailed question that you'd like the panel to ask or me to ask before we get to public testimony, please bring it up, and I'm happy to ask that question. I know 2 minutes isn't a lot of time. I will tell you, if you have a long speech prepared, I would stick to sort of the high-level points that you want to cover. It's tough to get through an awful lot in 2 minutes. I will also say that this is my meeting. That's kind of one of the things I get to do. And I'm running this like a committee meeting. I'm asking you all to be polite, be passionate and polite at the same time. I'm asking folks not to applaud when people move through. We know how most of you feel. We're thrilled you're here, and we want to hear from you. It takes a lot of time out of the meeting, and it doesn't make your point nearly as strong as it does listening to people clap all night. So please refrain from applause. And we want to stick to House Bill 77. If you get too far off track in your public testimony, I'll steer you back. We're not here to talk about critical habitat. I did talk to Randy, and he's willing to come back for a second meeting on that issue. So if you're wanting to steer off in that direction, I ask that you don't, and I'll unofficially sort of gavel you back to House Bill 77 if you don't mind. Let's use these 3 hours. This is a very rare opportunity. This is the first one and the second meeting in the state. Let's use that opportunity to cover House Bill 77 very well. I need to know how you feel before I go back to Juneau. I have a pretty good idea how folks in Soldotna and Kenai feel, and like to hear how you feel as well. So with that, I'm going to hand it off to Ed Fogles, who, again, is the Deputy Commissioner for Alaska DNR, and thank you again for being here.
Thank you, Senator. I'm going to stand up here so I can kind of run the PowerPoint presentation. Again, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here. Can everyone hear me? Is this mic kind of positioned right? Sounds like I'm coming through loud and clear, okay. Again, thanks very much for the opportunity to be here. This isn't too rare for me to be here. I've been here in this room a number of times talking to folks in Homer about various DNR issues. I was a very smart and informative discussion. But tonight, we're going to talk about House Bill 77, and I want to give you a little bit of background first as to why we're even doing this. Why is this bill here? What are we up to? What are we thinking of to produce such a bill? So you need to understand a little bit of the background first, and then also I want to just sort of lay out our thinking at this point is that this bill was an attempt to solve what we saw as problems and hiccups within DNR statutes.
Yeah.
It's a huge bill, and not maybe one of its prime issues. It's very big, and it's a lot of changes, a lot of which are small tweaks in DNR statutes, and some of which aren't so small. But they are all designed to solve what we see as problems. And so that's kind of what I'd like just to lay out here. I want to kind of explain the problem, and HB 77 is our attempt to solve those problems. Not everyone agrees with the way that we've chosen to try and solve those problems. So if there are people out there that have other ideas that would help us solve those problems, that's what we're here to listen to. We're gathering up this input from these meetings and many more, and we're briefing all that up to the governor and to his staff and to legislators. I know that as this thing progresses in the legislature next session, there will be discussion about potential changes to it. So I think your input here is going to be very valuable to funnel into that process. So again, why are we doing this? Why are we doing permitting reform? Everyone just thinks that's some kind of a way to shortcut the process and reduce environmental standards and let the big corporations take over. I've been working for DNR for 25 years now, and a lot of that time has been involved in permitting activities on state lands. Whether it's big projects such as mines or oil and gas developments, all the way down to small projects, little docks, small businesses wanting to use state land or waters for some reason or another, all Alaska businesses are somehow tied into wise use of our natural resources and land. So our fundamental job is to figure out a way to make that happen while protecting the other resources that we hold so dear in Alaska. It's not an easy job, and very, very often not everyone agrees with the way we're doing it. And that's just that hasn't changed ever in my 25 years of working with DNR. So with permitting, we always are looking for ways to improve the way we're doing our permitting system. And by improve, I mean just getting rid of redundant, unnecessary steps so that when someone comes in that's trying to start up a microbrewery or a small business or a larger project, that it can proceed in a timely, predictable fashion. You may not always get a yes answer out of the deal, but at least the process is predictable. Right now, the Division of Mining, Land, and Water has a pretty huge backlog of authorizations that started a lot of this discussion, about 2,500 permits. All of those permits, none of those 2,500 permits were big, giant projects. They were all small businesses, small mom-and-pop operations asking us to help them do something on state land. So we, about 3 years ago, we initiated what we called our permitting reform initiative, and we just laid out a bit of a strategy for how to proceed. This slide kind of shows the five steps that we're looking for. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this, but just very quickly, step one is to improve agencies' internal mechanisms, and that's just not for DNR, that's for Fish and Game, for DEC, for other agencies. We're all charged to look internally and look for ways to improve the way we do business. And House Bill 77 is actually, you know, a subpart of step number one. Step number two is to enhance coordination. We've done a lot in Alaska over the last 20 years to develop a coordinated permitting process, and that's worked really well. It's pretty unique in the nation, and so we're looking at ways to improve that even further. Number three, we're seeking public input in various forums. We did a round of public meetings about 2 years ago where we explained permitting and we got input. Step four is coordinating with the federal agencies. I think anyone that's involved in a significant project knows that permitting, the state can't approve PEBLE and make it go. The feds have to approve it too. And the feds actually drive the process, as I think most of you are aware. So in any kind of project, we have to learn how to work with the federal agencies more efficiently and better. And then step five is just looking ahead at new activities that we're seeing coming down the pike, such as shale oil, underground coal gasification. So quite frankly, we have no experience with permitting that's very rarely been done in Alaska. So we wanted to make sure that we have the environmental regulations and statutes and policies in place to handle that kind of permitting activity should it ever appear down the road. And as I mentioned, a lot of the focus was on the Division of Mining, Land, and Water. It was really backlogged. That division is sort of our fundamental base of the Department of Natural Resources. Everything flows from the Division of Mining, Land, and Water. It's our real estate branch, it manages water. Those are some of the core fundamentals. And it's one of the biggest divisions. That division was just getting so bogged down, so understaffed, and so bogged down in its machinery that we focused on that backlog. It had a 2,500 permit backlog at one time. The legislature and the governor were kind enough to make sure we got some additional resources. We hired some new staff. We got that machinery going quicker. But part of the deal was we were instructed to learn how to make the machine run better also. So that basically more and more people want to use state land. The machine is going to need to do more work. So we can't continue to just feed it more people. We have to learn how to make that machine run better. And so that's really the outgrowth of looking at statutes, regulations, policies, and procedures all across the board. And we've been doing that for 3 years now. So on the statute side, that's where House Bill 77 comes in. 2 years ago, we floated a bill. It was House Bill 361. That was introduced by the governor. It went through the session, no controversy, and it passed. It was a similar bill in many respects, where it was just a collection of small tweaks to DNR statutes. Many small tweaks, none individually were earth-shattering, but together they really helped our machine run a bit better. So we came up with batch two. And this is House Bill 77. This is a bigger batch, got a little more ambitious. So we packaged this together. So, and again, a lot of different changes a big package. This one, however, had some that were a little more far-reaching and caused a little more controversy. And that is why you all are here today. I'm going to go through those the three prime changes that we proposed that have caused a lot of confusion, a lot of the controversy, and a lot of the opposition to this bill. And I'm going to kind of explain those, and I'll explain the problems that we're trying to solve in each of those three changes. And keep in mind, I think there's a lot of concern and opposition to very specific parts of House Bill 77, but as we heard very clearly last night, the general concern and opposition is that we are taking away Alaskans' ability to participate in the process. Okay? And that's really the key. That's the key core message we're getting. That's the core concern that we're hearing from everyone. And I think most of that concern comes from these three specific changes that we're proposing to make. And those are the ones I want to explain very carefully. And then I'm sure we'll generate that discussion. But again, there are a huge number of additional changes in the bill. There's a change that allows us to do land exchanges more efficiently, and this has caused a bit of confusion too. But land exchanges are a key part of how we do business, as Alaska's land status pattern crystallizes as we get our entitlement from the federal government, and then Native corporations get their land. We're finding that it doesn't always match up the way we thought it should be. So as time goes on, we're going to have to start exchanging small pieces of land here and there to make things work better in Alaska. So that provision is key for that. We have a provision that allows us to renew leases, extend leases for shellfish farmers, which is key. That was found to be a very crippling flaw in the statute that would hamper the aquaculture industry. So HB 77 fixes that. There are provisions in there that allow us more flexibility in selling land, in advertising on the internet, hosting like eBay sales when we do our normal land sale process that's in so much demand for DNR. So there's a lot of small changes in there that have not risen to the level of controversy as the three that I'll start the discussion with. So first I'm gonna hit the first one, which is a change that would clarify in state law that DNR has the authority to do general permits. A general permit is a permit that when we see an activity that's small, minor, repetitive, has minor impact, and there's a lot of process involved that doesn't really merit the level of impact, we can issue a general permit that basically does the public notice upfront one time and says, if this is approved, if DNR approves this, then from then on, for these activities, there is a lesser process. And typically there's no public notice. Someone will come in and say, I want to do this here. The adjudicator will look at a list of SIPs and go, okay, as long as it's within these parameters, you know, fill this out, pay your fee, you're good to go, okay? A lot of other agencies use general permits already. DNR actually uses them already. We just don't have it written specifically in our statute to do that. So our idea was just to clarify in the statute that we could actually issue general permits. I do believe that it is in Alaskan's best interest for all agencies to have tools, when appropriate, to issue general permits. It just decreases the burden, it decreases the cost of government. The key is to make sure that those general permits are used appropriately and for the appropriate purposes. And the way the language is written, it caused a lot of concern that those side words weren't there for DNR. And that's probably one of the biggest biggest concerns we've heard. It has some language in there that specifically says, notwithstanding any other provision of law, DNR may issue general permits. Well, our intent in writing that was that it's notwithstanding DNR statutes in Title 38, and the intent was for a public notice up front. Not very clear in the statute. That's been pointed out to us many times, and that is something that we're taking back, and we're briefing the governor's office on, we're briefing legislators on, and that may be something that gets discussed as a change to somehow dial in this provision for general permits. And that's where, you know, we want a level of comfort from Alaskan citizens that we're utilizing that tool properly, and the statute needs to put those sideboards on, then that's a discussion that we need to have. This is just an example of some general permits on the left, some that we've already used. We issued a general permit recently for mooring buoys for commercial fishing vessels in the Kisilof River. The examples on the right are examples that we may use in the future. But again, the discussion in my mind really should be, okay, A, is a general permit an appropriate tool for state agencies to use? And then B, if so, how do you structure it so that the Alaska public is assured that it's somehow Okay, the second of the three, let me just go back to general permits really quickly too. So again, the concept of a general permit is that the public notice happens once up front, and then DNR would authorize activities down the road without public notice. So that's one place where, yes, you know, under this statute, public notice, public input would be lessened. So I just want to point out, make sure everyone's really clear where in HB 77 these provisions are. Okay, water reservations. This is another one of the very controversial parts of HB 77. Actually, it's very misunderstood, and part of that is our fault for not explaining how water permitting works. And I need to give you just about a minute-long education in water permitting that may be redundant for some of you. But all waters in Alaska are reserved for the people of the state. They're for use by the people of the state, and DNR is charged with managing those waters. So if you want to use water in Alaska, you need to come and get an authorization from the Department of Natural Resources. Tonight with us, we have Dave Shady, who is the head of our DNR Water Resources section. So he's the one, this group is responsible for authorizing water use in Alaska. And just a quick side note, I forgot to introduce Ms. Esther Temple, sitting next to Dave Shady. She's Commissioner Bailash's special assistant and our legislative liaison too. She's here with me this evening also. So anyway, again, anybody that wants to use water in Alaska needs to get in a significant quantity needs to get an authorization from DNR. Now, there are three tools that we use to manage water in Alaska. Tools one and two, water rights and temporary water use authorizations, are for people to allow people to take water out of a water body and use it. A water right is sort of the dominant one. It's the big one. It's the permanent right. If you have a well on your property, you probably ought to have a water right to protect your quantity of water on that. It's a big deal to get, but once you get it, it's yours. It runs with the land, and it'll protect that water source. It's meant to be a very permanent property right. Number two is the temporary water use authorization. This is a short-term temporary authorization for a relatively minor quantity of water. For short term, it's a permit that can be revoked anytime by DNR if you see things going awry or non-compliant. That's probably 90%+ of the workload that we do at DNR, probably temporary water use authorizations. We're using them anywhere for authorizing ice road construction on the North Slope for oil and gas exploration or development to a construction company that wants to take a little water out for dusting roads from a creek. To, you know, any number of small businesses that need to use water. So again, that's probably the bulk of our load. It's really the only change in HB 77 that affects temporary water use permits is the provision to allow multiple temporary water use permits to be issued to the same project. Okay. Technically, the law is unclear as to whether we can do that right now. We actually do that. They are temporary, and there's a concern that by doing that, they turn into permanent water authorizations because we can do them over and over again. But the reality is if someone wants a long-term water authorization, they're going to go and apply for a water right anyway. Temporary water use permits are very temporary. Again, they're revocable at will, and they're all blessed by a fishing game before we can issue them. So we'll talk about that here in a minute. And that's sort of some of the examples of the typical temporary water use permits that we issue: ice bridge crossings, ice roads, ski resorts, snowmaking, landfills, sewer water projects, and you know, hydroelectric projects probably would get a water right. They're pretty permanent. So let me talk now about tool number three, water reservations. This is the one that House Bill 77 proposes a change to. A water reservation is an authorization to keep water in place rather than take it out. It keeps it in the water body. And it's typically used for one of four purposes: for protecting fish habitat, navigability, recreation, or water quality. Okay? It's for a public purpose. One of those four categories is intended for a public purpose. Alaska is one of the only states in the nation, not the only one, there's several that there are exceptions, but it's one of the only states in the nation that allows persons to apply for water reservations, okay? And by allowing persons, that means an individual can apply, an interest group, a mining company, anyone can apply. And there are two reasons why we propose to change this. One is that we believe this is a public asset. It's held for the people of Alaska. So if something should be driven by a public agency, and the change would restrict the application of the water reservation to a state, federal, or local government agency. That's the change we propose. So a public government agency would have to apply for it and hold the reservation. That was one of the prime drivers. Another driver, to be quite frank with you, is we saw potential misuse of this particular component of the law. We were seeing water reservation applications submitted to us, and they're complicated to adjudicate. They typically take about 5 years of data to collect. So we're getting applications for a water reservation and then being challenged that in that 5 years that it takes to collect the information, that we shouldn't allow anybody else to use that water. And that is fundamentally one of the problems we're really trying to fix here, that exact problem. We do not think it's right that anybody on planet Earth could file their $1,500 and then all of a sudden say that for the next 5 years, nobody, no Alaskan, no tribe, no mining company, no anybody can use that water. Now, we don't think that's right. Now, when we proposed House Bill 77 last year, we were actually going through some legal battles on this very issue. In the interim, since the session, some of the court cases have been decided that sort of clarified this and really have sort of clarified that there's that the mere application, submittal of an application for a reservation doesn't grant you a right. So I think we're a little more comfortable at this point in that issue. But it's still a problem, that is just the fundamental problem that we keep coming back to is, you know, if someone applies for a water reservation, anyone, you know, do they have the right then to try and stop anyone else from using that water? We don't think that's right. We just don't think that's good public policy. We still have protections in there. We can't issue any water permits or authorizations without Fish and Game's involvement and their concurrence. So again, I think this slide just sort of kind of repeats some of the things I just said. It does not prevent private entities, tribes, or anybody else from applying for water rights or temporary water use permits to use water. It's just a public asset, in our view. This slide emphasizes the Fish and Game's role. We may come back to the slide when I'm done. I don't know, Randy, would you rather me run through this and then come back, or?
Go ahead, I'll come back.
I'll sum it up, and I think Randy is going to come up and reemphasize this slide. Anytime we issue, before we can issue any water authorization for anyone, we work with Fish and Game. They are responsible for telling us, is there enough water left in that water body, plenty of water for the fish? That's their role. We ask them, they tell us, thumbs up or thumbs down. None of that changes in House Bill 77. None of it changes. Okay, the third thing that HB 77 proposes to change, it's a real important thing, and this has caused a lot of concern amongst people. And again, this is the other piece where I think a lot of Alaskans are thinking they're getting less involvement in our process. This is about appeals, to administratively appeal a DNR decision. Right now, the way the statute reads, you merely have to show that you're aggrieved. And legally, that's a very broad term, and anyone can appeal anything under the current statute for any reason whatsoever. We have proposed to change that standard to substantially and adversely affected. So legal terms of art, for us, it raises the bar a bit. It means that someone has to explain to us how they're going to be adversely affected by the decision. Right, and you have to at least try and tell us how this decision can actually hurt you. And this is a big deal. And I think Alaskans really need to think about this hard. If Alaskans really want anybody to be able to appeal any of our decisions at any time, then so be it. That's the way it will be. But I'm just telling you that a big part of our administrative workload right now is dealing with appeals. We get a lot of appeals coming through the door. Almost everything we do gets appealed. And a lot of those appeals have no merit to them. The appellant has really no standing, no stake, no interest in the decision. They just don't like it for whatever reason. We're just trying to make the burden easier on our staff to be able to focus on appeals where someone actually says and shows us how they are adversely affected. So that's our proposal to the appeals statute. It's, again, I know it caused a lot of people, a lot of Alaskans, a lot of you all, a lot of concern. And, you know, remember, if you don't like this, just remember, that's the situation. There's anybody, anywhere on the planet can appeal anything that we do for any reason whatsoever. If that's the way we're to run our process and our system, then, you know, that's the way it's going to be run. But I just don't think, I think there's got to be a smarter way to do it. Okay? This is our proposal, and maybe there are other ways to address this problem. This is our proposal. Again, I think I've kind of gone over this. You know, we don't really, other than the general permits part, there's no other reduction in public notice. There's a provision in there some of you have read that talks about a preliminary best interest finding may require public notice. Well, that's actually an extra opportunity for notice that wasn't in the statute before. We tried to put that in there, and that's sort of been misconstrued as somehow reducing notice when, in fact, we're increasing an opportunity to require public notice. And then again, I think on the right there, just a summary of the point on the appeals process. And then again, this is just a summary of my presentation. You know, general permits, we think that it is important for agencies to be able to allow general permits and use them. We think it's going to benefit all Alaskans. Nothing is going to prevent you from using water. Nothing is going to reduce habitat protections by fish and game. And in a lot of these ways, I should mention about the appeals change. One of the provisions there also requires someone to participate in the process to be able to appeal. And that's an attempt to get people to participate in our decision making up front, earlier. And that's the way we'd like it to work, because that way we can work out problems better throughout the process so we don't result in a decision that gets appealed. I think that's pretty important too. Anyway, that was really my presentation. I think I'll turn it over to Randy Bates, the director of the Habitat Division, to speak a little bit on the fish part of it all, and then I think we'll have a little bit of panel, and then we'll be open for discussion.
Thank you.
Anything you want to say before I move in?
No.
Okay. Jump right into it. Good.
Good evening. Is this too loud? Just right? Just okay. Thanks, Carmen. Thank you all for taking the time to come out tonight. I know it's time away from families and the sunshine that you guys have down here. So beautiful. Thank you for coming out. Thank you, Senator Michiki, for inviting us down and creating this dialogue. Commissioner of Fish and Game, Cora Campbell, was with us last night in Soldotna. She was overbooked today. Was back down in Juneau today. She sends her regrets for not being here, and I am fortunate to be here with you instead. So thank you for, again, having me, and it's a pleasure to be here. Randy Bates, Director of Habitat. Juneau is my home. It's very similarly beautiful, but maybe we don't have as big a halibut as what you have here is what I hear. Specific to this bill, nothing in House Bill 77 affects authorities under Fish and Game. We have heard concerns during last legislative session that House Bill 77 lessens protections for fish and game and fish habitat. Under fish and game authorities, we provide, through our fish habitat permitting process, we provide protections for both fish and fish habitat in resident and anadromous water bodies. Our fish habitat authorities are separate, independent, and unchanged by this House bill. We also play an important role with DNR in their permitting process when they are reviewing water rights and water reservations. DNR consults with Fish and Game, and our professional biologists provide input, comment, and coordinate with DNR on whether enough water is going to be left in the system to provide free fish passage and enough protection for the habitat that those fish depend upon. So, again, that is unchanged in this bill. We have a very good working relationship with DNR, and we will continue that as it exists. House Bill 77 does not lessen, nor does it diminish, Fish and Game authorities or protections that are currently in place. The bill is also very specific and limited in amending the water reservation process, and that is specifically affecting who can apply for reservations. Fish and Game has a long-standing role of partnering with applicants and other folks that are seeking reservations. We expect that process to continue. Nothing will change there. For those 35 pending applications that are the water reservation applications that are defined as a person, Fish and Game is willing to partner with that applicant, with those applicants if they want to proceed with that reservation. And that ensures that the data that has been collected to date and the application and the work that has been done to date is not lost. Fish and Game will assume those applications and partner with those willing individuals seeking reservations. My comments are as simple as that. I'm certainly interested in hearing from all of you. I know that's why you took the time to come out tonight as well. So, Senator Michicki, those are the briefest Fish and Game comments. Thank you.
Thank you. You shouldn't run for office. You don't talk nearly long enough.
And just one minor point, and we talked about this last night. There's only one place, perhaps, where ADF&G's influence in the general permit, of course, Section 1, notwithstanding any other provision of law, could possibly compromise Title 16 tool in managing fisheries habitat. Is that correct?
And thank you. And Ed also addressed this. The intention of that provision was to apply only to DNR's chapter of law.
Mm-hmm.
And we're on the record, as is DNR, clearly stating that this bill and that provision does not diminish nor trump Fish and Game's independent authorities. Again, nothing in HB 77 diminishes, lessens, or reduces the protection and the independent authority the Fish and Game has.
Okay, Ed might also.
Yeah, it's just maybe one of those areas that the bill needs a little adjustment, as we discussed last night.
Clarity could be good.
Clarification. It's one of those, we all trust both of you inherently, but you may not be there forever, right? So with that, I'd like to bring up an extra chair. And Terry Rebel, where are you? Raise your hand, please, Terry, our Homer staff. If you have a question for us, first of all, if you want to testify tonight, please sign in at the back of the room. And as we pull pages, when public testimony starts, there'll be new pages. So keep signing in. Sign in with your email address. We'll continue to contact you with other House Bill 77 related issues as we learn about them. And also, if you have questions for us during the panel discussion, please hand them to Terry and she'll get them up to us. So with that, I'd like to welcome our two panelists tonight, Mr. Bob Shavelson. Where are you, Bob? Bob is with the Cook Inlet Keeper organization. Some of you know Bob. And a second panel member is Mr. Robert Ruffner with the Kenai Watershed Forum. We had other panel members that Senator Rick Halford was coming down and had a personal family matter, and also Mr. Roland Maul was coming with United Cook and the Drip Association. He was unable to make it because of Board of Fisheries meetings. He's stuck in Anchorage, so I shouldn't say stuck in Anchorage, but you know what I mean. So with that, what we did last night is we gave each panel member a couple of minutes to sort of talk about their general idea, thoughts on the bill, and then they're open to ask any question they want related to House Bill 77. And again, just folks out there in the audience, bring up your questions to Terry, and we're happy to ask them for you if you think they take a little longer than 2 minutes to explain during your public testimony. Mr. Shavelson.
Thanks, Senator Chitty. I know you asked me to wear a salmon suit tonight to show how reasonable we are here in Miami, but I chose not to. Anyway, I don't want to take up a lot of time because there's so many people here that I think your testimony is going to be more important than what I have to say. But we're going to keep Robin looking at permitting issues probably very closely for the past almost 20 years. And I've had a lot, but we have very different opinions on what this bill does. One of the things that you talk about the general permitting process, and you talk about small repetitive activities, yet the state is already using a general permit process for the discharges from oil and gas activities in Cook Inlet. So they're authorizing roughly 2 billion gallons of toxic discharges in the Cook Inlet every year. Those discharges could occur over a large geographic area. People have an opportunity to comment on that general permits issue, but every time a platform goes in, you can't challenge that.
Let's figure out this feedback issue. Is there a technical person with?
Yeah, the off button guy.
Okay.
Try yours, Bob.
That works well. Okay. Mr. Samuelson.
So in any case, I've heard a number of times. I've read your presentations, and I've heard you speak tonight and last night. But you know, we talk about the intent. But you know, there's smart lawyers with the state, and they know how to write language, and words are important. Why is there such sweeping language, like notwithstanding any other provision of law or the significant and irreparable harm in Section 1, and how do we have any confidence that we're not going to see larger activities that will be authorized under that section? Yeah, thank you, Bob. I mean, I see your point, and I think I tried to address it when I was giving my presentation. I mean, yeah, the language that has been written there, you know, by our staff, by the Department of Law, is pretty broad, and I think that's one area that we're all looking at, that maybe that's a place where we need to entertain some changes. You know, I'm not the person making the changes at this point. I don't get to bless changes, but I think my job right now is to make sure that my managers on up to the governor understand, you know, what the public's concerns are with that particular provision, and I intend to communicate that upward. And I think that's really as much as I can say on that tonight, but I do see issues that you raised. But I still think that there's got to be a way for us to be able to structure a general permit tool to be able to use to make our work and the lessons ability to use land a little more efficient.
You'll have another chance.
Well, I guess I would open up by just thanking Senator Bachicki, you know, both for convening a hearing, constituent meeting here on this issue. I think that's really valuable. But also, as someone that's a stakeholder in this, you know, to have been watching as it was working its way through the legislative process, to know you were paying attention, you were willing to listen and bring some of these concerns up. I think that's a big deal for all of us. So I really want to express my appreciation for you to do that. And also to the Deputy Commissioner and Division Director here for coming down and kind of getting beat up on last night and maybe again tonight. So as my day-to-day job is, you know, working on Kenai River and stuff up in Kenai Soldotna, you know, one of the things that we do is we collect water data. So we're one of these parties that has worked to get data that can be used, you know, not only for figuring out what the minimum in-stream flow requirements are for fish that can be used by the department, but for a whole host of other reasons, emergency management, flooding, designing of roads, et cetera, you know, where we have to deal with water. And one of my primary concerns here is that it may not be the intent, but the actual language. I mean, I think there is some differences in what we've heard from, you know, every time we hear, we go back to the intent. You know, if the intent doesn't match the actual language, the issue that is pretty front and center for me is that the people that wrote it that know the intent aren't always going to be the people there that are implementing the actual language. So it, when we hear that, oh, you know, the intent isn't to squelch the collection of data and to allow people to apply for these in-stream flow reservations, in actuality, that may happen. It's, you know, we do have strong partnering abilities with Fish and Game, and I don't see that that would change in the immediate future. I mean, I think things have worked well for us to do that. But this particular language does open the opportunities for that to change. And I think people that help fund these types of projects in public and private partnership would be reluctant to do that with losing our right to be able to file for in-stream flow reservation. So I'm very concerned about the loss of rights in the application process. I will say that I agree that, you know, who holds those reservations once they get put in place, whether that should be a private individual or a government entity. I think, you know, government entity is probably appropriate to hold those reservations once it's filed, but taking our rights to apply for them is one of my big concerns. Again, I don't really have, you know, much in comments and questions. I think the Deputy Commissioner outlined the pressure points quite well, and given that the large crowd here, I'd like to see it moved to the public testimony as soon as possible. So.
I don't want to put me in a position of stopping people from talking to you.
I've limited maybe.
I do have a couple more questions I'd like to get to. On in-stream flow, that's something we've worked on very hard because we think that Alaskans should have the right to keep water in their streams for their fish, and that's a central issue here. And a couple issues that you've raised here, the one rationale you raised that for the changes that we see here is that, you know, this should be a public asset, a private entity shouldn't have the right to do that. And at one level, I almost think there's an argument that government can do it better than private enterprise, which is kind of turning some of the things we see on their head. But on the west side of Cook Inlet, if you look at the Chewitnut River in 1996, the Department of Fish and Game filed to keep water in the stream for fish. And from 1996 to today, the Department of Natural Resources did not act on that. And so, you know, you characterized citizens coming forward and wanting to keep water in that same river system as a misuse. And I would just say that citizens exerting their right to protect their commonly held resources, because if you look at Article 8 of the Constitution, we all collectively own the fish and game resources. So I see that as a fundamental right as Alaskans. I don't think comparing us to the lower 48 does much good, because if we try to emulate the lower 48, we're going to have salmon runs that look like we're in California and Washington. So I don't want to see us go down that path, but I do want to create a misperception I've heard time and time again, and that is that if Alaskans come forward and they apply to keep water in the stream for fish, then it somehow stops all withdrawals of water for 5 years. And I've heard that a couple times, and it's factually and it's legally wrong. And I just want to give you a chance to talk about that, because we know from a court decision where we said we've got this in-stream flow application that hasn't been processed. Somebody came forward, a coal company actually wanted to take water out of the stream, and the court simply said that DNR had to quote-unquote consider fish. So that doesn't appear too burdensome to me, but they also found that DNR hadn't even considered the fish. So I guess I'd let you talk to that, because I don't think it's accurate to say the water side up for 5 years.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. Well, a couple of things on that. I mean, I guess, you know, the court did rule, I think, pretty reasonably on that. But again, the challenge by the applicant was that we shouldn't allow anybody else to use that water. I mean, that was the legal challenge that we were facing at the time. And that's when we actually put together House Bill 77 at that time. Yeah, like I said, the court's rulings in that interim have been
favorable, I think, to the Alaskan public on that issue. And with respect to, you know, the timing of processing those applications for the Chuitna project, I mean, basically, we haven't made any decisions to issue anyone, any water, or any authorization, or anybody, any decisions have been made to allow anyone to mine through anything up at the Chuitna. In fact, we haven't even received the final permit plans for that operation up there. So I think our point there was, you know, it's be silly for us to adjudicate any kind of water request from that water system until we've finished a multi-thousand page environmental impact study that's ongoing right now, probably has 2 more years of study. That's part of the groundwork for the process that we've developed over the years, is to work with the feds, do the environmental analysis with the EIS first, then make the decisions afterwards. Seems fairly basic, but I mean, I stand firm on that.
Actually, I thought about one that I asked last night. I'm going to have to go back on my previous comments. But I do think it's important and fair to bring up the same issue that we brought up last night in this discussion, and that was dealing with the standing. So it deals with, you know, who files these water rights and who's first in line, et cetera. And, you know, we heard in the presentation that that the department has looked at, hey, there's 35 out there that we haven't processed and haven't dealt with yet, but the Fish and Game is willing to take those on. So peeling the onion back a little bit, you know, we can answer the same question we talked about last night, which is when that offer to take over those permits happens, you know, what happens to the first in line, the dates of, you know, who filed, how is that going to change, and what are the effects of that?
You know, Art, you do bring up a good point. And so, as I said last night, that was one thing that is pretty clear, that if an interest group has applied for a water reservation, one of those 35 applications, if it is transferred over to the Department of Fish and Game, then the date of that application changes to the date that it gets transferred over to the Department of Fish and Game, the way the law currently reads. So, and so that's the way it would be under the currently written House Bill 77. Again, there are better ways to do it. You know, we're all ears. I would like to say, though, that the date, I think, in our, the actual date of application is sometimes overblown in importance. Again, if we have competing applications for a water use, we're bound to adjudicate them all out, regardless of when people applied. So, you know, and that's why I think the Chuitna project is the classic example, where we have someone has proposed a fairly major project with potentially a lot of water use, a very complicated project. We're doing a multi-year environmental impact statement that's still got 2 years to go. And none of those decisions, no matter what date the applications are applied on, will be made until after that EIS, the environmental studies have been completed. That's the correct way that that we should be managing our water bill.
Well, Ed, you characterized the project on the west end. This is the Chuitna coal mine near Taranaki and Beluga, 45 miles west of Anchorage. You characterized the applicant wanted to use a lot of water, when in reality it would be removing 11 miles of a salmon stream. So that's where the citizens got together and said, we don't believe that you can recreate the wild salmon stream. If you can, go down to Oregon and Washington, California, you'll make more money than shipping low-grade coal to China. But the issue that comes down in the context of permanent streamlining is predictability, and not only is predictability important for business who want predictability so they can make smart investment decisions, but predictability for Alaskans, so every time an outside corporation comes up and wants to develop some harebrained idea like my good salmon stream, that people don't have to stop and put down their lives to engage in these epic battles. So I think the predictability needs to go both ways. I would love to see that embraced in whatever revisions come out of HB 77. But my question really comes to the standing point. I think this is where it gets complicated, because standing is kind of a legal concept, but it's basically the harm that you suffer that gives you a right to be heard by an administrative agency or a court. And through our history, standing originally was just an economic harm, and it evolved over time with our society recognizing a wide variety of harms. And one of them,
these trains.
Oh, that's going to cost you.
Is this a committee hearing?
Ring the bell at the dog after this.
In any case,
the notion of standing has evolved over time, and I mentioned before that Article 8 of our Constitution makes every single one of us the owners of the fish and the game and the water resources. So I don't think it's accurate to say anybody in the whole world has standing to appeal things. It's Alaskans that own these resources, and we have those. And what happens under this legislation is you go from a fairly broad level where somebody can challenge an opinion, and I would also push back and say, there aren't that many appeals relative to the number of decisions the DNR makes, and I would say that would be nice to come out in a legislative process to show those things. But my question is, if under this legislation someone has to be directly impacted, that to me approximates an economic harm, because a corporation has a permit that's up for appeal, they always have an economic interest. But can you describe where an Alaskan would be directly affected? For example, a fisherman, would he have to show, through a genetic tracer that the fish that he wants to catch is going to be impacted by a certain activity?
I'm not sure that that's a very easy question to answer. I think a fisherman that's going to be impacted should be able to show if an activity that DNR is going to authorize might impact his livelihood. I'm not sure that would be that difficult to show. I mean, I don't think you'd need to go through some genetic tracer program to do it. I know that if I were an appeals officer sitting there and looking through those appeals and DNR is proposing to allow an activity that might impact fish habitat somewhere, then somebody that relies on that fish habitat for fish is definitely outstanding under these proposed changes.
I just want to follow, because this stuff does get a little bit complicated, but the notion of a general permit, again, a general permit embraces this idea that one size fits all. There is no activity that occurs at the time the decision is appealable. So where is the harm that someone would suffer to appeal a general permit?
Well, I mean, I guess I would argue that if someone thinks that by the issuance of a general permit to them, they might be harmed, even if it's in the future, that to me would qualify.
Would that be a direct harm?
I would say that they potentially in the future could be directly harmed. Now, I'm not an attorney. I know you are, so I'm probably treading dangerous ground here, but I mean, that's the way I would certainly read it.
I'm reformed.
You're not that reformed, Bob. Great question. I have one that came from the field, and this is what is the difference between a water reservation and fish and game's requirements for in-stream flow? And before you answer that, I know it's been a concern of mine, and it's something I worked with several folks in this room about an amendment. My largest fear is ensuring adequate in-stream flows in anadromous streams. I'm a commercial fisherman, a sport fisherman. It's sort of what we do here. Very important to all of us. I assume that's why you're all in this room. So what is the difference between how extensive is the program that ensures that we have adequately in-stream flows in waters of importance in Alaska? And I don't know if you want to use that other or not. I'm trying to keep feedback to a minimum.
Yeah. You're handing me the mic like I'm going to answer.
Oh.
I can give it a shot and start, but I just...
it's a combined answer, I suspect, but... let me give a quick try about fish and game's requirements in our consultation coordination with DNR on in-stream flow, because I think that's where we're trying to, I think that's where the question was generated. When DNR is adjudicating a water rights permit or a temporary water use application, they do approach fish and game and ask us what is necessary to protect fish and to protect fish habitat. And that's where we take a look at what is necessary as in-stream flow and respond back to DNR and say, there's 100 cubic feet per second flowing here. Fish need 50 cubic feet per second in order to persist and be healthy in habitat. And that's what we'd recommend DNR maintain in the system. That's our input to DNR. DNR then reflects that in their permit. Independent of that, we have a Title 16 permit, and that's what I was talking about, is independent, unaffected by this bill, we have a permitting system where those types of water withdrawal activities have to come to our agency for permitting as well. And so we look at the water withdrawal, the activity, and make sure that there's no entrainment or impingement of fish. Fish are protected. There's free passage around the structure that might be in the system. So that's our protections as it relates to fish and game in-stream flow and in habitat.
No, I just follow up with Randy's comment and say, I mean, there's two different ways that this process unfolds, right? If an applicant comes to us and asks to use a certain amount of water from a water body, right, then we ask Fish and Game, okay, after they take out their proposed withdrawal, is there enough water left for the fish, right? And sometimes it's just a no-brainer. Sometimes they want to take out such a small amount of water and it's such a huge water system that it just makes no difference whatsoever. And Fish and Game's like, it's an easy call for them, right? And then there are other times where I personally was involved in the permitting process for the Pogo mine a number of years ago, where there was a request for water withdrawal in the winter from the Good Pasture River, which is a pretty important fishery. At that point, you had the low flows. And all of a sudden, that became a lot more serious. And we worked for months and months, probably 6 months, with Fish and Game and the applicant and experts to figure out, you know, what the risk levels were, how much water needed to be remain in that water body, and how much the company would be allowed to take. So those are sort of the two ends of the spectrum and how we sort of work those issues.
And I apologize, Randy, if I confused departments there for a minute.
No, not at all.
I have some other questions. And, of course, our goal is to, you didn't follow the rules, Roberta.
Well, I couldn't
be fair. And, Roberta, am I supposed to be able to read this?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
He's looking for the cleanest writing.
I am. We'll start with that. It'll give me some time to... Actually, I think we're done with the presentation, and I really want to thank Islands and Ocean Visitor Center for providing the space, but could we turn off the presentation light? I think that would be helpful.
Good on you, Peter.
Well, I don't know. What do you all think? Do you have, like, can you turn them up a little bit? Because this is sort of nice. It's, yeah, we don't want the glaring ones. It's keeping folks calm.
You can come up front.
Oh. Well, okay. If general permits are needed for smaller...
The projector off.
Oh, right. If general permits are needed for small minor repetitive permits, as Department Deputy Commissioner stated, why does House Bill 77 say any activity? Does House Bill 77 state the public notice will be issued up front for general permits? Good questions.
Yeah, well, actually the proposed language in House Bill 77 isn't for any activity. It does limit it to those that won't cause significant or irreparable harm, number one, and then it excludes parks, state forests, any coal mining activities. So it is limited, and it has that the commissioner determines doesn't cause significant or irreparable harm. So that's sort of the bar that was written into that language. And again, like I said, on this, I think the intent is clear to figure out a way to give us a tool to be able to use. If people out there have ideas on how to fine-tune that tool and make it so that it gives you more of a comfort level as to what those activities would be, that's what we're here to hear about.
Gene Parker, are you still here?
He left.
I was going to let her run up and give her public testimony. She had to leave to teach a class. Okay, this is more of a statement. There's not a question here, so I will read it as we start our public testimony. And here's a question. Come on, here. Are you a physician before you became a community person?
No, I was a nurse, but maybe that's community. So on the general permit, how does the public know what and where the permit is being given?
Okay. Well, that's a good question. So, like say, for instance, the Kasilot mooring buoys, the general permit we just issued, I mean, that was a general permit that we public notice that said in the Kasilot River, in this particular reach of the Kasilot River, we will allow these mooring buoys to be placed if a couple of conditions are met. One, they had an Army Corps permit, and I think the other was just they came in and they told us where they were going to be putting the mooring buoy and paid the appropriate fee for that buoy.
Where was the public notice put?
It was a statewide public notice, and it was, I'd have to look at the files, but we do our standard notice. We're required by law to do notice in newspapers. We have a state public notice system. The public notice is all actions on the state website. Plus, I'm sure we went down to the local area and beefed up the public notice in the local area.
So even with HB 77 at this general permit?
Roberta, you're turning it a little bit into a living room conversation. So you have another question?
Yes. Water reservations, I guess while the application's being processed, it seems, wouldn't someone else wanting to use the water need a permit?
Yes,
okay.
They will.
And one of the things about the appeals, state is very pro-development, so when there's far-reaching consequences, ocean acidification, pollution, et cetera, I mean, that's where it gets tricky as to how do we prove that we're being affected. I mean, when it's far-reaching consequences.
No, that's a valid point. I mean, at some point, it's always tricky, right? No matter where you set the bar, if you make the decision that we need folks to go the extra little bit to show how they're going to be affected, then you're not going to be able to ever draw a really bright line. I just don't think that. So you're going to have to make an attempt at setting the bar a little higher and then work with it. If that's not something that's acceptable to the people, then it won't happen. But that's just, you're right, you raised a good point.
You should leave those because we are going to type up, well, it's on public record now. We have it recorded, but we are going to present. So the value in these meetings, not only for me and for the department, but it's also for other policymakers. Very consistent themes tonight that we heard last night, and I think it will help. I think it will help. Make it better, maybe make it good. Next question, significant and irreparable harm. Question, how will substantially and adversely affected be defined and by whom? Please compare this phrase to the significant long-term damage phrase in the Alaska Constitution in relation to the 2009 case of Hammond Fisher. Versus DNR, that was decided against the plaintiffs by Judge Arsuth and is currently continuing as DNR and Pebble Partnerships seek $1 million in legal costs from the plaintiffs.
Well, I don't think I can really answer the question about comparing it to the case because I'm not familiar with that case, at least not familiar enough to be speaking to it at this time. But as to one, how will substantially and adversely affected be defined and by whom? I mean, that is a call that will be made by the commissioner of DNR. He's the one that gets the appeal, and he has to decide whether to take the appeal. So, I mean, that's the way all appeal decisions, whether to appeal or not to appeal, are made by the commissioner. He has to make that determination. So this will just give him a higher bar. And again, I think, as I just mentioned to that last question, I mean, it is subjective. It's to the commissioner to figure out
you know, if he believes that the appellant is directly impacted by that decision. Again, very difficult to draw a real bright line and say these appeals will qualify and these will not.
Sorry.
Thank you, sir, for a second.
No.
These balance the turn for the questions from others. And then what we're going to do is public testimony. And then what you get to do at the end, like we did last night, is the panel gets a wrap up on what they learned from the public testimony and any final comments they want to make.
I didn't know we were done with questions.
Pardon?
I didn't realize we were done with questions.
I think we're done with your questions. But if you have a quick one, you could, you can.
I'm never quick here.
No, I understand. I want to give everyone in the room a chance.
That's great.
Well, first of all, you run the tight ship.
But go ahead.
Yeah,
no.
Go ahead.
No, I'd rather you did.
I'm incapable of being quick.
We won't move on until you ask the question.
It's not a question, so it was.
I don't know.
If you can jot it down, please. That's the way we'll do it because we want to record the question. So the next question is for Ed Fogel. Heard a rumor that ADF&G has proposed taking over in-stream flow reservation programs. If HB 77 passes, presumably this is to dispel controversy over the bill. Please provide more information about this proposal and how those who are affected by the in-stream flow language of the bill would still be able to push those reservations or pursue those reservations.
That's an easy one to answer. I know nothing about such a proposal. I've never heard about such a proposal. So, Randy, are you proposing something here?
I'm the director of Habitat. I'm not aware of any proposal as such. Nothing has come out of our department that I'm certainly aware of. Okay.
Can I clarify that question?
Was that your?
What we've just spoken to about the 35 applicants that have already submitted, there was a discussion at some hearing or meeting recently that suggested that those 35 applicants would still be able to pursue their application through Fish and Game.
I see where the question is coming from now. So, it wouldn't be, Fish and Game wouldn't be taking over the whole program. And they wouldn't be taking over the adjudication of those. They would be taking over the applications themselves. So if you've submitted an application for in-stream float, you would work with Fish and Game. They would just write a new application up in their name for that exact same application that you did and then carry that forward.
I'd like you to answer
right.
That one, if not all of you.
The question is, who personally will accept any and or all responsibility for any natural resource disaster or destruction of the irreplaceable ecosystem?
That's got to be you, Peter.
That would be me. I would personally accept anything that goes wrong in the environment anytime. No, I'm not making fun of the question. The reality of it is, it's all of us. We run a state that has a lot of different activities. And what my job is to do is to ensure, I'm a trust but verify sort of guy. My job is to ensure that these gentlemen are doing their jobs, and when they're not, it can get awfully noisy that I don't think they are doing what they need to do to protect our natural resource interests. That's why we're here. I'm uncomfortable with this bill in its current form. And very much appreciate them being here to help make it better, to make sure we have some of those protections. But it's a good question. Thank you.
I'd support a bill if it would make it even more difficult to essentially mess with an ecosystem that you did not create and you cannot lay claim to messing with. I would support that bill, but not one that makes it easier for you to do whatever you want.
Okay.
I'm really accepting the liability because I know the law.
This
not legalese, but I know the law.
This isn't necessarily a living room discussion, but I'm always happy to have them outside of here. You
right.
Can call me anytime. But
you can address the question or respond to the statement if you like.
I think I did a pretty good job addressing the question on the paper. But
The next question, what about notifying, this is not about House Bill 77, this is about buoys. So what we're going to do, you have a few more?
Yes, sir, I do.
If there is objection from public to sale, lease, use, and commissioner disagrees, how is judgment made? How about independent panel from Kirkendall Keeper? I'm not laughing. I'm just thinking of Bob being an independent panel. But that's a good question. How about an independent, a second sort of non-related entity that helps with a commissioner objection to a public sale lease use?
Okay, so for the public sale lease use, let me talk about sale or lease first, because sales, there are a number of different disposals that are authorizations that DNR does. Selling a piece of land is at the top of the list, and you sell something that's forever, that's a permanent disposal of state interest. A lease is almost there, it could be a 50-year lease. Those we take very seriously. Not that we don't take anything seriously, but those we take the most seriously. Those we need to make sure that they get a lot of public involvement notice, and that appeal track. It's not easy for us to sell land. When we do a land sale for a subdivision, for example, I mean, you have to go and we have to do a land use planning process, which takes years, and we have to do a disposal planning process, which takes years, and public input, and then we have to do the sale, which takes a long time to put together a public notice. So those tracks take a lot of steps and a lot of time. Now, if the Alaskan public think that we need an independent panel to sort of check all those steps, then, you know, so be it. But that's going to be an extra step. It's going to be money. It's going to be time. It's going to make things run slower. So if the Alaskan people have to come to terms with, you know, how quickly and efficiently you want government to work and make these decisions, and versus how many layers of protection you want to put on them, because there's, you know, there's a plus and minus to either side.
Is anyone else currently writing a question? Because I do want to get to public testimony, and then if we have available time, we can. You have another one, last one, okay? And then after public testimony, if we have time, we can go back to questions. That's okay. Is this
or someone else?
Sure.
Yes. Not my right.
Is DNR required to follow fish and game recommendations for water and habitat?
Good question. No, the Department of Natural Resources Commissioner is ultimately the decision maker on water authorizations. Now, we'd be totally stupid if we didn't go against them. Went against them, but I mean, the way the authorities are laid out, the recommendations as to the level, I mean, those are recommendations. However, in order to use water, you have to typically put a structure in the water body, either divert it or put a structure in it. You cannot do that without an authorization from Fish and Game. So we may have the final say on a quantity in a water authorization, but Fish and Game can then decide not to issue the Title 16 permit that allows them to actually do that. So there are checks and balances.
Aren't any of you concerned that this House Bill 77 would allow too much power or authority to one person, the DNR commissioner? And I'm going to answer that. I am concerned. I don't like the term notwithstanding any other provision of law in Section 1, and it's going to be one of my primary issues that I raise when we get back to Juneau. They do have a significant level of authority today for general permits. The DNR commissioner is appointed, it's approved, they are approved by the legislature.
and they are answering to an elected governor. Ultimately, you have the power. Now, it may not be the governor that you want right now. It may not be the governor. It may be the governor you want right now, and it may not be the governor you want next time, but that's sort of how our system works. The people are in control, and it is sort of a majority rule thing. What I don't like about Section 1 are two things, and one is that level of authority, and the second thing is sort of defining a general permit to smaller projects. So I think there are issues. I think we're here because we're concerned, and I'm not sure that those in the department support every sentence in the bill, and I think they're here listening. So I very much appreciate that, and I think your thoughts and concerns are going to be brought back again in active dialogue in Juneau on this bill. Who's likely to benefit from House Bill 77? Please be specific. Who's likely to suffer?
Answer that. Alaskans will benefit from it. Again, that's the intent. And you may disagree with that. You may disagree with some of the provisions, and maybe it needs changes. But the problems we're trying to solve are harming Alaskans. And if we can solve those problems, all Alaskans will be benefited. So that's really the premise for it. Now, maybe this particular version of House Bill 77, again, maybe it needs to be changed or modified. But again, the intent is there to make a better quality of life for all Alaskans. I have a 24-year-old daughter that's graduating from UAA here really soon. I want her to have a job, and I want her to raise her kids in Alaska, and she's not going to be able to do that if she can't find a job somewhere. And I don't want to stay here unless I can fish and have clean water. So, all those things have to come together.
I started this conversation that there's not a good guy and a bad guy in this, and I honestly believe that. I do think that folks have different ideas on what's best for Alaskans. But certainly I think the intent of the folks that are proposing the changes have a better Alaska in mind. I think there are those of us that will benefit. Depending on the administration, this can go both ways. If you had that kind of power with a very anti-development person in the administration, you'd have equal problems of nothing happening. So I think good legislation protects both sides of the aisle, and I think that may be why there may be some gaps here as well. So if you think about it going the other way, I think it could benefit Alaskans on both sides, and if it's the wrong bill, it could hurt Alaskans on both sides. Last question, well, there's a couple here. Under coastal management, there was a 30 and 60-day review process for review of permit applications. It allowed meaningful public participation. Has the state developed an equivalent process? How has the process changed to maintain meaningful participation?
Well, the state has not developed another process to replace the coastal zone management program. That was a debate before the legislature a number of years ago, and the program was not renewed. I mean, that was a tough go all around. Personally, I had to figure out what to do with 30 employees that were working directly for me. So coastal zone program has not been recreated to the state, and it did require a certain process that's no longer there for. You know, permits and authorizations that DNR authorizes, different ones have different existing public notice requirements. Many of the actions we do require a 30-day minimum public notice. Typically, anything that's significant that we do at least a 30-day public notice, if not longer. All the land sales, disposals of land, leases get noticed with public input. So we do have our processes, and again, they really vary depending on the many, many different types of authorizations that we issue.
Okay, and the last question is regarding the proposal unlikely to result in significant and irreparable harm standard. Mitigation can be defined as an act of reducing significance. Reclamation can be defined as the act of repairing. Can any activity that can be acceptably mitigated or reclaimed be determined unlikely to result in significant or irreparable harm. It's from Dylan, I can't read your last name. That's a good question.
Yeah, that is a good question. I mean, if someone comes to us and proposes an activity on state land and shows us how they're going to mitigate or reclaim the property, I mean, it really depends on what that activity is, right? So I'll give you an example, a mine, okay? Every mine in Alaska is required to be reclaimed. If someone wants to mine, they're going to come to us, and they're going to give us a reclamation plan that we have to approve. And there's a lot of science, a lot of regulatory oversight and scrutiny over that application. Sometimes it takes years to figure that out, right? But a lot of these mine projects can come in and show us a good reclamation plan that could be a success. While that mine is operating, it's a disruptive activity. I mean, no one will disagree with that. It's a lot of dirt moving, a lot of disruptive activity. And in a case like that, there's no way that a mine, even though you can show that it would be successfully reclaimed at the end of the mine life, would fall under that bar of not causing significant or irreparable harm, in my view.
Okay, this is really, really the last question before we go to public testimony. And we answered it in a sense with the who is most likely to benefit from House Bill 77 and who is most likely to suffer. But this question is, what specific problems are you trying to solve with House Bill 77? How do they affect the viability of young people's futures?
Well, I mean, I think that was really the main thrust of my presentation, was to explain the problems that we're trying to solve here. The big overriding problem is that we have 105 million acres of land that Alaska was given to provide an economy for. We don't have Intel's here. We don't have Apple's factories here. We have our land that we use. I mean, our economic well-being right now is derived from the wise use of that 105 million acres of land. It's the oil pipeline that goes away. You know, we're all in deep trouble, and that's a serious concern. And I think that the problems we're trying to solve is to make sure that our permitting process is not a hindrance to responsible and wise use. And that is really the overriding problem. And how is it going to benefit the young people? I mean, again, if TAP shuts down, my daughter doesn't get to work in Alaska.
Yeah, I have to say that I ran on a platform of streamlining permitting. I no longer use the word streamlining permitting because it sort of sounds philosophically as though I think steps should be cut out. But I do believe that permitting should be more efficient. However, I'm pro-development, pro-responsible development. I'm not anti-corporate, clearly. But I do think that they should have the checks and balances that require them to perform at an extremely high level environmentally. The reason we're having these meetings, I want to put something in perspective. Some of you agreed, some of you disagreed with my vote on Senate Bill 21. But I came back to a rather quiet district on Senate Bill 21. I had a few emails, to sort of show you the difference on House Bill 77, which is what we're discussing tonight. I had hundreds of emails that were concerned about House Bill 77. Those concerns have not lessened. They've increased through the months. So it is a bill of a very high level of concern for our district, and it's not just the Southern Peninsula. Our meeting had as many people last night, if not more. I haven't gotten a count here, but at one point there were 100 people in the room last night. So a lot of concern, and that's why we're here. So it's not that we don't all believe in a future that requires efficient permitting in the state of Alaska. It's just key that we get that effort and we make sure that it's done correctly. I think that's why your vote is here as well. So
Okay, so we want to get on to public testimony, and I think probably the best way to do it maybe is up at the podium. What do you think about that?
Or you could hand that away. I don't know where people are, whatever you want.
The list comes up. We don't do the handing around thing.
How this works up here.
And if I can have that over. Okay, so I'm waiting for a list, Ms. Roble. Oh, there she goes. And we can just do a couple pages at a time or any of the full ones. So, unfortunately, there are rules. And the rules are I'm going to time you for 2 minutes. And if you're, you know, ready to wrap up a sentence at the end of 2 minutes, that's fine. But let's keep it pretty close. This is 2 minutes is enough time for essentially a general statement with a little bit of detail if you're not used to speaking publicly. But what I'll also say is that you can hand in written testimony. That can be as long as you'd like for it to be. So you can send me an email after tonight's meeting if you'd like, and we will include that in the testimony that we share with other policymakers in Juneau and the departments. Terry?
I don't have anybody on my list yet.
That signed in to speak?
Oh.
I bet there's a big, long list of... It'll say whether it says yes or no if they're going to testify. I should have. I brought them from Kenai, and I didn't explain it.
Does anybody want for 2 minutes?
Can I say one thing, Peter, before you think about the permitting process?
You want my
Yeah, you don't want to just do it in your wrap-up?
I could, but I think it's relevant now. We talked about the coastal management program.
Oh, yeah. Jeannie Parker?
I do. Yeah, I'll start with Jeannie Parker's. And here it is. I apologize for not being able to stay to speak as I teach class tonight. I'd like House Bill 77 to reflect the Alaskan Constitution, and it seems to be trying to streamline the permitting process, making decisions in the permitting process more in the hands of agencies and organizations. Process allowing individuals to apply for water reservations is being misused, and this can be addressed in the courts. Alaskan resources are important to me, and I consider fish and a clean environment to be at the top of that list. Sincerely, Jeannie Parker.
Here we go.
Okay. Okay, first on the list, several pages, very good, is Mr. Paul Fuse. And Paul, can you come up? Got 2 minutes. I've got a timer. It should be about House Bill 77.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. So I'm Paul Fuse, and I just came down here to do a dive on a shellfish mariculture operation that I have here in the Kenai Peninsula, and I heard about this hearing, so I'd come by and put my 2 cents in. No one cares more about clean water than people that are involved in shellfish mariculture. But I read the bill several times over. I encourage everybody to really read the bill and take a look at what it actually says. And when I look at it, it's hard to say whether you support it or not. So I want to speak to just the specific provisions in the bill. One is that it helps solve a problem that we have in shellfish mariculture leases, where go for 10 years, but if we're going gooey guts or even oysters, the lifespan of them goes beyond the 10 years. Those that I planted in year 4 or 5, I don't even know if I'm going to be able to keep my lease as I go on into the next years. But also solve that. But, you know, I heard a lot of people say this takes away a right to speak on things, and as I read the bill, I didn't read it that way. What it said is that we would have rules about how we're going to be able to speak. And
Right now, if I went in and applied for a shellfish mariculture permit in some bay here, somebody could come in and say, well, I'm appealing that. I don't really have a reason, but I went there once, and just in my heart, I want to know there's some place that has pure wilderness and no development. They really, maybe they came from Boston or something. And they'd say, well, I'm going to take that to court, and then I'm going to file an appeal. And the ability to abuse the system, to use time against people, especially small companies that are trying to do something, is pretty immense. By the same token, if somebody came in and I had a shellfish farm in that area, and someone wanted to come in and put in a log dump, let's say there, I don't think I'd have any trouble being able to say, I'm adversely affected by that. I could be from the runoff, you know, of the chips and everything, and that I'd be able to do that and go in and find standing under this. But one thing I like about the bill is I have to do that on the front end, so that when DNR is considering their permit, they're saying, well, geez, there's a shellfish farm right there. Why don't you move it over here? It gives them a chance to fix it. So oftentimes what happens is that it's an ambush situation later, that someone files it or files the, you know, the lawsuit afterwards. So in that sense, I think, you know, these provisions of the bill are important, especially to small businesses. And I just, if I could say one quick thing, the general permit, you need to work on that. That language is too broad. I agree with everybody who said that. You know, if you can define that more of what an insignificant impact is, I think it would give people more faith in giving that discretion to the commissioner if they knew what it really was. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Next is Mike O'Meara. And on the sound, I don't know if the mics are individual or not. That I think that one maybe could be turned down just a bit, but I'm not a sound guy. And if everybody's okay with it, we'll live with it.
Thank you, Senator Matricki, for arranging for these meetings. Appreciate it. I'm not so sure that I like the idea of fine-tuning the permitting machine. I don't really think that necessarily the permitting process should be effective as much as efficient. I mean, efficient as much as effective. It's more important that that process makes sure to weed out poorly conceived projects. I don't want to see the machine fine-tuned to the point where it devours citizens. HB 77 gives an appointed official, the commissioner, way too much authority, in my opinion, notwithstanding any other provisions of law, of course, is the primary example of that. But other terms throughout the document are nebulous, such as significant and irreparable. I also think that general permit applications are not adequately restricted in the bill. We need clarification on how they would be applied. As to the in-stream flow provision, you know, Alaska water law is recognized as outstanding among the western states. I don't think it's a good idea to change it. Alaskan citizens own the resource by constitutional mandate and are to benefit from it. I consider it appropriate that citizens be able to apply for in-stream flow to reservations. As to the issue of that delaying the process and the ability for others to use the water, it seems to me that when one applies for water rights, not an in-stream flow, but water rights, you do have prior right to the use of the water. Okay, the only other thing is I would like to see adequate notice from the NR for citizens to comment on what's being planned and what's being done. Anyhow, thanks again. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It'll take us, Terry, I don't know if there are more sheets, but it'll take us a couple of hours to get through what we have. So you might leave that for them to continue signing in if they want to keep. And that's the most polite ringer that I could find on my phone. So I, Mr. Flora, you did not write yes, but would you like to testify?
I think you
Okay. George Mate.
My name is George Mance. I live in Prince Creek. Ever since I've lived in Alaska, which is about 37 years now, I've always been interested in Siberia. And, you know, I was curious how it had similar flora, fauna, and landscapes, but it had similar indigenous cultures. But its government is completely different, or at least I thought so, you know. So about 5 years ago, Vladivostok Airlines had a special deal flying from Anchorage to Petrovost, which is on the Kamchatka Peninsula. So I talked my wife into going to Siberia for vacation, and you know, we had a good time. We arranged to have some float trips and see bear views, and I saw a cellar steeple and stuff like that. But I really talked to the people, too, about, you know, the Russians are very attuned to the land, and, you know, they talk about all these problems. It's very centralized government, it's autocratic government that's top-down, you know, doesn't pay any attention to the people, it's more deals with the oligarchs, and, you know, lo and behold, I mean, that's what I see HB77 is, you know, it's really a top-down approach, and citizens are being left out of the process. It's going to be a boon for lobbyists, because it's all going to be these inside deals. So, I think, you know, the HB77 is a big bill, there's a lot of stuff in it, and, you know, some things may be interesting, there's a lot of housekeeping things, but it has some fatal flaws. And the fact of the matter is, that bill is almost all the way through the legislature. It's in the Rules Committee of the Senate. There's really no time to make any changes. So the only solution to me is just drop it and start all over again. Thank you.
I'll repeat. This is my meeting. We're not going to applaud. It takes too much time, and I'm not going to allow you to.
It isn't your meeting.
I'm not going to allow you to boo the folks you don't agree with. So let's stay polite and professional. I think the testimony is far more effective that way. Next is Linda Gorman, please.
Thank you for coming. I really have enjoyed your presentation, and you have cleared up a lot of my questions. My biggest concern with this bill is the power it gives the commissioner. An appointed commissioner who can change every 4 years at the whim of the governor, or what if they could just quit and go away. Our governor said he wouldn't trade any one resource for another, and I kind of feel like this could be the tipping point of doing just that. I see House Bill 77 as a door to open up mining and gold mining and not maybe responsibly. I'm not opposed to government controlling things and our state having natural resource projects, but let's do it responsibly. And I'm not sure House Bill 77 is giving us that ability to do that. And that's really about all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gorman. Next is Hal Shepard.
And the next. Oh. If we're saving time.
Yeah, let's say and the next.
Please, sir.
I see what you're saying. After Mr. Shepard will be Mike McCarthy.
My name is Hal Shepard. I'm the director for the Center for Water Advocacy and Steward. We have spent much of our time last year in with fighting the passage of this bill. And, I think that Mr. Fogel probably summed up the comments best as far as our perspective about this bill. There was a lot of discussion about the economic benefit this will bring to Alaska, and I would suggest that there's a lot more to Alaska than just the economy. And this bill basically, in our opinion, is an effort to, the classic example of privatizing an effort by the state to privatize water rights over what is a resource that is beyond a public resource, it's a human right. The human right to water is globally recognized. And you know, this bill starts, of course, they have a very long list, but Mr. Fogle mentioned the temporary water use permit. I think he mentioned that there was no water right that had been issued in the Chewitna issue when that subject came up, or the dispute over that river. What was not mentioned is the number of temporary water use permits that have been issued to the mining company, which I don't know the facts on the specifics of those permits, but you can issue up to 30,000 acre feet of water under that permit without any type of public input. This bill would increase the number by the issuance of multiple temporary water use permits, would increase the devastating impact in perpetuity. These are totally issued up to the commissioner's discretion, the NR's discretion, and with multiple permits, what's the limit of the amount of water that can be issued? The issue about, is that really 2 minutes?
It really is 2 minutes. Okay. You can wrap up your sentence.
But just on the point of, on the standing issue, I want to talk about the standing issue real quick. There's a legal legal term of standing that already exists that would address the issue of standing. I got lost in the train of thought. Thank you,
Mr. McCarthy, or Mr. Shepherd. Mr. McCarthy, and then Charles Davis. Well, actually, a couple of folks didn't write yes or no. Rika, mm-hmm. Would you like to speak?
A real quick comment.
Okay, very good. Then Mr. McCarthy and Rika.
Thank you, Senator. First off, I'd like to say that I did learn something positive from this meeting, but I didn't get some things addressed that I would like to have clarified. I think HB 77 needs to go back to the drafting board. Start over. You're streamlining things as far as simplifying permit and not tying things up time-wise is good. It's efficient. But I'm afraid that modernizing Alaska permitting system could be changed to Putinizing Alaska's permitting system. The ramifications of HB 77 are like introducing frankenfish into your diet. You don't know what the results will be. A case in point is Project Cherry, 1962, Alaska, 31.5 miles south of Point Hope, where I lived for a while. Public outcry stopped the nuclear excavation, 5 atomic bombs, but public outcry finally stopped it just in time. But secretly, the largest bomb blown up in the United States in Nevada, the Sudan bomb, material from that secretly was taken up to this blasting site, 43.5 pounds. And the result of that in the end was the Point Hope had a cancer rate 38% higher than the national average. The U.S. Department of Energy finally had their feet held to the fire. $6 million was spent by June of 1993 to clean up the contaminated Project Chariot site. This is a clear and convincing case where the wisdom of the people was greater than the government, and well illustrates why HB 77 should not be passed as proposed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McCarthy. And Rika, I can't read your last name.
Mow. M-O-U-W.
Oh, thank you. And next, Sarah Jakinski, would you like to speak?
No.
After Rika will be Charles Davis.
Thank you. I just wanted to chime in and say that I have a problem with the standing part of having proof that you are directly affected. I, as Roberta had pointed out, that farther distant point of, I think, just proving that it's not in the public interest or in the public good, rather than having to prove that it's a direct, that I would be directly affected. I think citizens have a larger role than just saying directly affected. And the idea of redundancy, I think oftentimes redundancy helps catch problems from one agency or oversight from one agency to the next. So I don't think redundancy is always a negative thing. It kind of helps in that aspect. And so thank you. I learned a lot. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Davis, and then Wes Schatt? Mr. Schatt? Are you?
Thank you, Senator, for having this public meeting. My name is Charles Davis. There's got to be some way to write this bill so that all the public interest lawsuits establish fact. Somebody's got to have standing. Hopefully, it's not going to be put in such a way that it removes public standing to adjudicate fact. You know, and are you the one that does the oil and gas leasing?
No.
Well, that's the way that we can have more money in the state is to get a fair rate for our leases.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. And Mr. Schatt? Okay. Next will be, let's see, Mr. or Ms. Middleton. I can't read the first name. Would you like to speak? Okay. Chris Rainwater. And after Mr. Rainwater is Sarah LeCay. McQuay? Sarah here? Okay.
Thank you, Senator, for the hearing. We appreciate it. A lot of things going on with this bill. In my opinion, there's not many of them are positive. But I think where it goes wrong in the worst case is with this in-stream reservation. And when you allow the creek removal in part of its watershed to be permitted under this in-stream reservation chapter of your permitting, I think the in-stream reservation is predicated on there is a creek there that you're arguing about how much water you'll take and how much you'll leave. So I suggest that to cure some of these problems, you should remove that piece of the permitting out from in-stream reservation, create a new best interest finding process so that we know when this is actually being considered in our community that a creek in its watershed would be removed for a period of time or maybe permanently. But it's different than in-stream reservation. I think it's confused. That's probably why you have so many people jamming you with in-stream reservations trying to block this. So it's a suggestion. I hope it's a positive suggestion. I sit as chairman of the Homer Soil and Water Conservation District, and we probably find ourselves in the middle of this House Bill 77 because the least form of government in this state that might find these in-stream reservations in our lap would be conservation districts. And we didn't really hire on for that, because I think it certainly leads to large litigation. But we'd be happy to serve our people if that's where the state of Alaska would want us to be. However, there's a companion bill. I think a companion bill to this 77 is called 207, which will eliminate conservation districts from the face of the state. And I find myself against both of them. Thank you.
Mr. Rainwater, do you mind capturing, or, yes, Mr. Rainwater? Do you mind capturing those thoughts and zipping me an email with a little bit more detail?
Oh, sure.
Thank you very much. Sarah? And then following Sarah is, there's a maybe, Donna Adderholt? Okay. Thank you. So after Sarah is Glenn Seaman. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. I'm Sarah LeCay, and I've been hearing a lot about water reservations and water rights, and the world will be greatly affected because Bristol Bay supplies half of the salmon supply to the world, half of it comes from one water. River system in Alaska, so I can see the world will be greatly affected. And I'm wondering how we find if the corporations that want to come in are coming in and disbanding. Mines and salmon runs have never coincided together. And for our salmon runs to be predictable for, you know, another 20 million years, what could we do to get the water rights to the contents of the water? A good quality of life for all Alaskans. To me, Alaskans are salmon and fresh water and clean air. And so I would like to see where we could propose the predictability that our runs will be here forever and what good standing of companies coming in. If we screw up the hydrology and our mountains are going to dry up and things, and our salmon aren't going to have anyone to come home to.
Thank you, Sarah. After Mr. Seaman is Howard Forbes.
Thank you, Senator, for having this opportunity. Thank you, DNR, for coming. I guess I find it in part. I was an employee for Fish and Game for 27 years. And as working for the state, I felt it was really important that I work for the people. I work for the governor, but I also work for the people. And what I always tried to do is I always tried to get public comment. I really welcome that. We should not be afraid of that. We should seek that public comment. As you mentioned, Senator, that you want to get good legislation. And part of the reason why there's so many people here in Soldotna is because this is not good legislation. It, as a citizen, it kind of concerns me that, I mean, you said, like, DNR didn't have to be here or Fish and Game, and they are. But why isn't this happening in other parts of Alaska? Why do we have to move this forward so quickly that we're not having this comment? We're not having this input. I learned a lot in this. I think the goal of trying to streamline permitting is a worthy goal. I think there's a lot of things that can be done to improve that. But it really scares me that this has to be done and done so quickly. I would like to see an investment in Alaska. I would like to see, I hope the legislature will consider, while permitting, but they ought to invest in Alaska and investing in the state employees and not always decrease them and improve your capacity to review and provide comments on these permits. I do think that there's terms, things I heard is like, what is irreparable harm, substantially adversely affected? I think these are examples of things that could be defined in the law. To achieve what you're looking for is good policy, understanding things that won't be subject to legislation and that will allow for some reasonable development. And the whole process, I think, should be transparent. And I think one thing we lost, I worked in coastal management for 10 years, and I'll bet you can count on one hand, maybe two hands, of permits that were declined because of coastal management. And I don't mean just because of all the policies and laws, but I mean there was a process where people had a chance to provide input and be involved. And the process was done in 30 to 50 days, and the process worked. And I'm afraid that the public is being built a little bit more out of this process. And I urge you to look for a way to have them be more involved. Thank you.
I want to thank, you know, as we go on, 2 minutes is not a lot of time. Some of you have some thoughts that would take a little bit more time to develop. I strongly encourage emails that we could possibly process further into helping us along here. So please take the time if you can. Mr. Forbes?
I'm going to pass on my comments right now. Can I have you two minutes?
Okay. Christy Fry, please. Are you Christy Fry? Could you sign or at least give us? You guys can be such an interesting crowd. Okay. If you can come up and give us your name for the record and your affiliation, that would be fine. And Ms. Fry, would you like to not testify?
No, it's okay. You can have my 2 minutes.
You do know that we're going to stay until everyone has an opportunity.
I'm good. I'll write you an email.
Okay. Okay, sir, if you want to come up. Name for the record, please.
Brian Covington.
To the
TV crash. I don't know what to say, really, at this point. I've seen this kind of thing time and time again. I'm not even an old man. I've seen it too many times. 46 years old for the record, and I've lived in many different states, and as a young child, I can remember salmon fishing, some of them, and the salmon are either completely gone or I don't know what to call them. Salmon might be a compliment. But I don't really like the way that the public, who has protections, is constantly having to defend itself and it's protected well by statutes that get passed for the benefit of a few and at the expense of the ecosystem, which is the whole. And just as anything, as my family, we are only as healthy as each member of our household. The same goes for the ecosystem. I don't know if you're making a lot of money on this person or not. I'm not accusing you of anything, but police have a thing called motive, and I just wonder what the motive is, really, behind the scenes. Why would someone go against what they inherently know is good for a quick high, some gold, some oil, some gas? These are precious resources, but as far as I'm concerned, if you don't find a nugget in the stream, then just call it a bad day. You know? This is really about the gold, and it's about the gas and the oil, and not having to really want to answer to the people, which are the ones who put you here in this position. As far as I'm concerned, you're disrespecting your position. You're disrespecting the people. You're disrespecting law with the proposal of a legal statute or act, in my opinion. And I'd actually like to call for anyone who's involved in writing this bill or in support of it to resign and save the people of Alaska a lot of time and money. And that's what we're talking about.
Thank you, Mr. Kevnick, and I appreciate your testimony very much.
Do I have 2 minutes? Or two?
Please.
If I didn't make my point in 2 minutes, I don't need four. Thank you. And I hope you have a paradigm shift in your dreams tonight.
God bless you all. Ms. Lord, Nancy Lord. And after Ms. Lord will be Shane.
Thank you. Thank you all for the good presentation. I have 2 points. One, I wanted to say, I think that the great resistance to the bill is indicative of a deep distrust that so much of the citizenry has about our current governor and his administration. And we have seen a rather constant erosion of environmental protections and of the public's interest. And I think that is being taken out on this bill, which certainly has its flaws. But my second point is has to do with the in-stream flow water reservation. I was working for the legislature 30 years ago when we passed the in-stream flow legislation, and I worked on it, and my memory is not perfect, but I do recall how intentional it was to say that a person could file for an in-stream flow to protect fish, to protect the public interest. And the legislature at that time felt that before that, the system was tipped towards developmental interests, and it was to sort of restore the balance so that there could be protection for families in particular that we all depend on. So that one feature of this bill I feel particularly strongly about. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lord. Just says Shane. We'll move on to the next one. That would be Ms. Roberta Highland.
Thank you
coming. This really has helped clarification on some points. I have to agree with Nancy Lord on the fact that there is a feeling, I went as far as calling it a dictator-like government right now. I don't like to throw those kinds of words around, but that's how it's feeling. And the frustration and a little bit of fear, a little bit of helplessness, a little bit of hopelessness as a citizen with the way Governor Parnell and his administration makes decisions and has continued to try to erode our rights. And HB 77 just seems to be the frosting on that cake, is how it looks to me. And so I agree that we should not, I mean, streamlining probably on some levels has some merit, but not when it starts eroding public comment and allowing too much authority to the Commission of DNR. It's really frightening when we have an appointed person to be able to make those kind of decisions. So that needs to definitely be rethought. Kind of like the idea of HB 77 going away, and I suppose with the fast track it's on, that's going to be impossible. But we do have a lot of fear around this. The general permit is too broad, and I really want, I just found out that the notices for public comment is no longer, doesn't have to be in the local newspapers. It only has to go to the post office, which I don't look at, and you have to watch on the website. So I get all mine from the newspapers, and even though it costs more, I would really like to see that reinstated, that we get public notice in the newspapers. Thank you.
Thank you, Roberta. Let's see, next was Jesse Dollinger. Did you want to speak? Okay. Thank you, Jesse. Lynn Whitmore, did you want to speak? And after Lynn will be, Joey Allred, did you want to speak? Okay, after Mr. Whitmore will be Jeff Bellman.
Well, I just got back from several days at the Board of Fish, and they're going to be discussing Upper Cook Inlet and Lower Cook Inlet regulations. And if you think they're very interested about how much water is flowing in the stream, you'd probably be right. You might want to get their opinion on this. It would be very interesting. And rather than take up everybody's time here, I just probably wondered if the co-cap could just ask for a quick vote on how many people are in support of this bill, just to get that out of the way. Can we ask the supporters to raise their hands? The bill as a whole as it is.
I would, can I make a wager first?
You go the other way.
You can feel free to ask that question.
Okay. As a whole, does anybody here support this bill? Cool.
What a brave guy.
One. Okay, I'm done. Thanks.
That's true. Mr. Shavelson, sir, I'm going to ask you to please not comment out loud. You had your turn to testify, okay?
I'd like to make one point.
There. You don't get to make one point.
Well,
Mr. Shavelson did make a very interesting comment just then. His comment was that Soldotna did beat you guys because we couldn't get a single person to raise their hand up there. So. You are a brave man, but honest. Thank you. Let's see. So the next person was Mr. Thalman. Yes. Okay. Katie Birch. Did I say that correctly?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for coming and taking time, guys. I'm really torn because I'm currently an employee of Fish and Game. I've also been a commercial fisherman for 30 years. So, I was told that if I testify in my own time, I have to say that I'm an ADF&D employee, and my statements are not reflecting this permit. So, got that fixed.
I'm going to restart your time. Now that you've got the lawyer speak out of the way,
yeah.
It's your time.
I guess, won't trade one resource for another that we've heard from our governor. It's not a very realistic proposition. Of course, Alaska is going to have to trade one resource for another. We, as has been brought up earlier tonight, we are a natural resource state. And so far, we've been able to pretty much exploit what we want without hindering each other. But a lot of that's due to the fact there's only 500,000 people here, and a lot of our habitats haven't been stressed. But as things change and more resources are looked at and more people come to Alaska, we will have to make decisions on what resources we're going to use. And I came here to speak to you as well, so I want to make sure you're listening.
Well, you just nailed me. I wasn't.
I
was looking at the next name, so if you could back up a sentence, so I will listen and count.
Yeah, I guess I'm just saying that as Alaska moves into the future, we're going to have more people up here probably, and we are, of course, going to be putting more pressure on all our natural resources, and we're all going to have to decide which ones we're going to exploit, because we can't exploit them all, because one's going to step on the other. So you are going to have to trade one for another. And I would just hope that the people of Alaska get to choose which resources are kept and which are used up. And so if the people of Alaska choose salmon, we have to be very, very, very careful, because no one else on Earth has been able to do it. No one's been able to keep their salmon run. So if we go about status quo and government and how things normally roll, we will guarantee lose our salmon run, because no one else is able to do it. So I think that if you find a lot of, people want to have a say, and I think that you guys should encourage people to have a say, because it's the only way, if salmon is chosen, it's the only way they're going to be saved, is to let people talk about it.
Thank you, Katie. Let's take a break. Serious about your testimony is much more effective on the public record without the applause. So a public meeting, I really encourage you to show your appreciation for each person equally. So let's take a 10-minute break and come back. We've got several more pages of folks. Give us a chance for a little biological break here.
There's home for you. Hold on. Yeah.
How's it going? Let's see where we are here. Let's see if I'm coming.
I think it's right in here somewhere. Yeah.
Okay.
I do. You're not signed up to testify? How late do you stay up?
Oh, because you're going to be up, late.
Yeah.
I've got to go pick Jed up at the airport at 7, so I'll probably just take off now. But will you just text me when you're done?
Yeah. If we can meet up after here, that'd be super.
Yeah. No, I'd like to do that. I'd like to pick up.
Yeah, 3068 or something like that?
803.
Yeah.
You don't have it.
I do. I swear, I do. You never responded back to me.
You got it. Well, remember, you think it's her.
Let me make sure I got you. We dedicated an hour to not only Ivan at the triangle, doing CPR on it.
Yeah.
Is he still working? Because he was working in Juneau for a while.
Oh, yeah, no, he's not there anymore. He actually was down in Vancouver for work-related, but it was more fun. It was a hockey game last night. Yeah, I was like, you have to come up for a couple beers tonight. He's like, what?
8068. Okay.
Okay.
Awesome. Yeah, so he's, okay, I'll text you.
I'll try to convince him to come out anyway, because I can usually rally.
Yeah, I suspect we'll be here until at least
8:39.
I am very interested. I am very interested in your concept. I really am. I think that's a really, I think we do need to separate that.
Can I grab a card for me?
Sure.
Good.
Good. Appreciate it.
I hope I just hope that the convention has to be so rushed. It's a shame that a year went by with the legislator at session where more people aren't doing what we did. Because if you get that input from the public, you're all going to be able to answer.
We call anytime.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate being here. You like to be you come down here overnight, you and I can have a couple of beers.
That's always the balance. You don't want to streamline it too much.
Good.
Well, because 100 people stopped me on the way back, but
I'm just saying.
Why didn't you get to go to the bathroom?
No, I.
There's two kinds of people in this world. There's nice people and there's not.
And I only respond to folks. Get folks to head back to their chairs, please. We'll get started again. There are some folks that want to head off to another meeting, I guess, so we'll get started.
Second row, far right, with the white hat on.
Speak up before we unlock, before you do so.
Second row,
I think, okay, so I believe we're back being recorded here. Let's be polite, please, Ms. Rohrer. Okay, next up, actually, it is Candy, so. And after Candy is going to be Rachel Lord.
Court reform committee, I think we need to dump this bill and start over.
it's gone way too far. There's it's very deep, very comprehensive. I think there are many intended, unintended consequences. I'd like to see the bill dumped and to start over and to form committees that would work on policy together where the people would have more representation and that this committee would form and work across all sectors, not only the corporate interests, the state interests, but the people's interests. And to set this very, very important policy that once it's set, this will be court reform law that we will not be able to go back on.
Thank you, Kenny. Rachel Lord, and then after that, Mr. Gibson, do you want to testify?
He left.
Mr. Easton, do you want to testify? Pardon? Okay. So after Ms. Lord will be Louise Lyon.
Thank you, and my name is Rachel Lord, and I want to thank you, Senator Michiki, for holding these hearings. I want to thank DNR, I want to thank Mr. Phillips for being here. I do wish that these hearings had been done by DNR, and that had actually been a priority. I agree that there is disagreement about how we move forward for future generations of Alaskans, and I believe that people generally think that they are acting in the best interest of not only themselves but of their children. But this is, you know, our Constitution states we are an owner state, and the resources have to be managed for the people. And HB 77 really, there are so many elements of it that really feel like they disregard that. And in reading the proposed changes under HB 77, I felt that was. I did not feel any other sort of intent besides, you know, really kind of taking rights away from Alaskans and really eroding that part of our Constitution, which is so unique and is so special here in Alaska. And I'll echo what so many have said, that there's way too much power being put into the seat of the commissioner at DNR. And the final thing I'll say just regarding instance reservations, you know, Mr. Phillips mentioned your daughter, you know, working, you know, she wants a job, TAPS, clearly, I can't argue, brings a huge amount of money into the state. In-stream flow reservations for fish are also an economic driver in the state. We don't have our commercial fisheries, our sport fisheries. We don't have subsistence use if we don't have those fish runs. And those depend on that water in those streams. So those are an economic consideration as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lord. Louise?
Hi there. I'm bringing my son up with me. He's on our scale of life.
Okay.
Do you mind? I want the regular.
Yeah, but you don't get 4 minutes.
He can't talk to?
He can. Sort of joking.
Okay. Sort of. Well, I know it's asking a lot. I realize that. So I kind of have just the same things to say as a lot of other people have, and it's just a statement. But I'm kind of trying to look forward into the future because Kim and his kids and hopefully their kids after them are going to have salmon, and that's what I want to talk about. This bill really bugged me because when I first looked at it and started researching it, I was struck by how dismissive of individual involvement in government this seemed. It was like participation by an individual is an obstacle. It's going to slow down. It's going to make it hurt. And instead of giving you more information, giving you more ability to make good decisions, it should just be pushed aside, disregarded. That's what it felt like. I kind of feel like you, Senator McKitchie especially, should be pushing for more public involvement in decisions like this instead of less, and that's democracy. Giving one person in DNR a bunch of power to make decisions that are going to affect his kids, that just doesn't seem right. We need to be able to speak to this. He needs to be able to speak to it. So,
Also, fresh water is the most precious of all of our resources, and in the future, it's going to get more so. There's going to be more battles about it. The potential fresh water and salmon and all of the resources that are renewable holds for our future and both, you know, the Alaskan citizens is way more potential for those renewables than the non-renewables, which are going to be gone someday. They just are. It's inevitable. What we want to do is keep the ones that are going to keep coming back. Those are the ones to worry about. Those are the ones to really, really hold on to. So don't support this bill, Senator, please.
Galen?
I haven't read the entire bill, but what I have read really doesn't strike me as being that involved with anybody at all. It's not going to help any of our generations in the future. That's all I have to say, because it's rather embarrassing.
Great job, Galen. Thanks for that. So I've even got my DNR guys clapping up here now.
All about the
fish. Okay, let's get back to and the only reason efficiency counts is we've got lots of pages. If there were five of us and we all rated every testimony the same, I think you know where I'm going with that. So the next speaker is Megan Anderson. After that is Tom Young. Megan? Okay, Mr. Young.
I'd like to thank you for having me at meetings and participating, and just express my opposition to this. Let's see if it's back up and start over and get better legislation. For all the reasons that everyone has expressed before me. I didn't have but a week or so to prepare, so I have the ability to speak eloquently in just a couple of minutes. A lot can be said on this. So, thank you. Please oppose this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Young. I think you spoke just fine, rather eloquently. Mr. Martin. After Mr. Martin is Jim Stearns.
Turn the microphone up a little bit so that everybody is heard all the way in the back. I'm having some complaints about people not hearing.
Speakers, please speak into the mic. Can you all hear back there? Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. Sort of? Yeah. Speak into the mic, please.
My name is Lee Martin. I never have spoken eloquently, but I want to give you an example, sirs. Thank you for all being here. I want to give you an example of a personal DNR experience that I've had. Let me give you that example to a minor change. It will cost me $3,500 in the next 10 years to use the casino as I have for the last 35 years for nothing. My appeal must stay because we as Alaskans need to be able to apply an appeal. Example, on general permitting. A bill in the mail for the use of the Kusiloff River for $350 this year is not the way to inform me as a 30-year-plus user of the Kusiloff moorage to find DNR has the authority. And so I checked with my local representative, Paul Seaton, who was good enough to look it up, him and his hands, and found out that it is law that I pay in the Kusiloff River for a mortgage to the tune of $350 this year. Anyway.
Mr. Martin, please.
The mortgage area
in
the Kusiloff River, which the Army engineers have given me for 30 years, is now costing me $350. I may you and have no appeal is not acceptable. And may your offspring find it as uncomfortable in the future as I have. Thank you, Lee Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Next, Mr. Stearns. And after Mr. Stearns is Brian Covington.
I'd just like to say that this, I think this whole process has been kind of backwards. All of a sudden, we're sitting here talking about the problems in this bill, and yet this bill was almost rammed through at the last legislative session. And it was on the fast track to get this thing done. So the idea that we're supposed to trust the government, this whole idea here is like, let's trust the government, we'll make the right decisions. And yet, here they are ramming this thing through without any public input. And we're sitting here going, wait a second. I'm even hearing doubts from the DNR people going, well, yeah, there is problems in this bill, but yet we're going to ram it through. So how much trust can we really have in this process when now we're discussing it? And we've seen in the history of Alaska, I mean, everybody knows you used to get crab out of the bay here. The halibut limits were way high. The king salmon were right. What's going to happen if the people that are making these decisions have led us down this path? Where are we going? Like Bob said, what happened in Oregon, California, and Washington, we're right on that track right now. And this is just going to speed that process up that much more. We're going to hand a power to this commissioner who is this commissioner, like the Supreme Court. Look what happens when the Supreme Court goes a certain direction. You know, we get a commissioner who's at a pawn of the governor, and we end up with unilateral and arbitrary decisions that who based upon what? Based upon somebody's perception of what substantial or irreparable damage is, or who has the right to appeal and who doesn't? The whole thing is just absurd. I think we just need to gut this thing and start over, although it looks like it may be too late for that. I mean, you can see across the board partisanship. There's no partisanship. Everybody's against this bill. You know, right wing, left wing, middle people, survivalists, hippies, everybody's against it. And yet it almost got rammed through. So that's all I have to say.
Stop the meeting or just let it keep going?
You do it.
Hi, it's me again. I'm Brian Covington. I do believe.
You are next.
I do believe I used.
And you were signed in earlier.
Well, that was related to the meeting for 2 minutes. She asked me to speak.
Okay.
someone told me that they couldn't hear me in the back. I guess I speak too softly. But we do let me do karaoke. Don't worry, I'm not going to sing any more Doors or Creedence or nothing like that. I just want to make it really clear here that what's going on right now, this public hearing or forum or exchange, is about to go bye-bye. They don't really care about what you think, how this affects you or makes you lose sleep, or what it's going to do to this or that, anything that's holy, okay? They're going to go do this one little more dance of having to act like they really give a damn, if you don't mind my saying. So the fake little smiles and,
well, that's an interesting point. I'll shoot me an email. Check that out. I'll look into that. Well, I'm actually writing down what you're saying. But really, I'm writing Christmas cards.
You know, this is an atrocity. An absolute atrocity is what it is. I'm not going to go through each part of the bill. What's wrong with it? The whole thing stinks. It stinks. I hate to use this analogy. It stinks like rotting fish on the beach. So do something, people. You have the power. Don't lose it.
Next is... let's take a 10-minute break. I'm going to continue to take breaks. I talked about my issue with the applause. Everyone's word, everyone's voice here is equally important. I'm going to ask you to be professional. I think this is an extremely important meeting. It's why we're here. I think it's disrespectful to accuse people up here of not listening. And I'm here to hear you. I ask that you treat everyone equally and with respect, and that we listen to everyone that's going to come up, okay? So the next up... is Patricia Lillibridge. And after Patricia is Clint.
Oh, he's back here.
Okay. Is Patricia still here? Okay. After that is David Stutzer.
Thank you,
Peter. My name's Tricia Lilligridge. I'm a resident of Homer and Crypt Creek, and next year will be Homer directly. I'm up here just to speak to the concept that, look at all the people that are here. In this community, community makes things happen. And Peter knows real well that we built a playground in less than a year. And so there's a lot of energy in this community. And I think what I hear and feel is that I'm not a Fisher person, and a lot of you probably know me because I work at the hospital, but I want to have an understanding from our representatives about this process, because I've been here 40 years, and when I came, you know, the first time I was starting to listen about resources, we had the Native Claims Bill, then we had the oil pipeline, we had Governor Hammond, then we had, at some point, we got Governor Hochul, who actually made me feel so good about pressing through with the owner state, and, you know, the fact that I felt like as a community member and as a citizen of Alaska that I was being heard. And I think that everyone is saying here, we're just not sure. It isn't that I don't trust you 100%. I just want to know that you're listening and that you're going to hear what we have to say. And I think everybody who has misgivings feels that the lobbyists carry the weight. And we don't really want to see that happen over our natural resources. Natural resources is why a lot of us live here. You speak about your daughter coming back. I have four children that were raised here. None of them live here. That's not their problem. It's not a resource issue. It's a choice they've all made. Do I want to leave because they're not here? Heavens, no. My family has a quote which says, you can take mom out of Alaska, but you can't take Alaska out of mom. So after 40 years of being here, I want to know that these resources are going to be here for me and all the people after me, and that you really, I looked at this bill, it makes no sense to me at all, and I think the part that is really concerning is the governor introduced HB 77 and it went right through the legislature. Now, I've tried many times to get injury prevention information through the legislature and other bills, and, you know, it takes forever and more than a year. Some things that are so critically important to people's lives in the state, and it sits there, not going anywhere. Why did this bill go so fast?
You did. You ran out of time.
Did you wrap up
that sentence.
Well, can you help us understand why it went so fast to the House of Representatives?
This is public testimony, so I'm not here to answer questions, but what I've heard several times tonight is that it roared right through the legislature, and it didn't, which is why we're here. It was stopped in the legislature, and it's because there are folks that are concerned with some of the content of the bill. So let's focus on what to do next, and this public testimony will be very helpful no matter what some think or say. I can assure you that it will be very very helpful as we bring this information back to Juneau. This isn't an isolated pocket of Alaska. Kenai and Soldotna is traditionally much more pro-development than Homer is. We had as many or more people that testified all night long as well. So this isn't an isolated pocket. It's a common message. We had miners, we had oil and gas people, we had commercial fishermen, we had a lot of the folks that traditionally are more in favor of sort of speeding things up that testified against this bill last night. So I think it's significant, and I think it's extremely important that we have these meetings, and I don't think it'll be a wasted effort.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I really do appreciate you all being here tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. David Stutzer, please.
I'm glad they came kind of in the chicken for having these meetings. I was pleasantly surprised. I didn't think it was that we were going to have an opportunity to speak to these to this bill. I did read the bill quickly, and I have a lot of problems with it. But the biggest problem, and I will follow up with an email, but the biggest problem I have is the language that isolates the commissioner from the public. And several terms in the bill speak to that, but also the whole paragraph about who is actually affected. And I think it pretty much eliminates most of the public from being able to speak to any decisions made by the commission. I'm going to speak to what Senator Marchetti said earlier, and that is we all need to work together to make sure these are good decisions. And you know, and I understood you to mean that was the legislature and the executive branch, but I think you forgot that the public also is full of people with expertise on all of these things. And the way the bill is written right now, it pretty much eliminates, it seems pretty much, except if you're financially or physically affected, is the language in the bill, you are excluded from having any say in these decisions. At one point it says the commissioner may make public his decisions and his written statements. May. It does not say he shall or must. And that, again, isolates him from the public. I think it's a bad bill. It should be thrown out. And if something needs to be done to make this process better, rewrite a bill. I don't think speed is the issue. I think Michael Mayer said it right. We want to have good decisions, not fast decisions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Spitzer. And the entire team engaging that I was referring to is again why we're here tonight. It does include the public. Without the public pressure that I've enjoyed through this process, I wouldn't have the knowledge of the opposition. I had my own discomfort, but folks like you and the several hundred emails I received from my district sort of clarified some other concerns that people had. So I think it is a team effort. That's why we're here. Next is Ruby Hart. Did I say that correctly? Ruby? Okay, Richard Gustafson.
Thank you, Senator Chickie, for coming. And I like Katie Birch, I need to make it clear that I work for the Department of Fish and Game. I put in 38 field seasons, worked through governors from pre-Hammond to the present. My big question is why did the Coastal Zone Management Program not be reinstated? That answered a lot of the questions that we have here. It may have been a little bit slow, but it really worked pretty well. And I think I encourage you to try to get that reinstated and make the governor understand that it is a good program. Thank you.
Thank you. Just a little reminder that I didn't have the pleasure or honor of being in office when that occurred. Well, I think there are some beneficial parts of coastal zone management, but I think those are some things that can be discussed in the future. But I don't remember the count on the ballot. It did go on the ballot as a initiative, and unfortunately, it didn't do well. But that doesn't mean that there aren't pieces of coastal zone management that would be helpful in this process. So, good comments. Thank you. Next is, and there are a lot of names that didn't write anything, so Mr. Kaplan or Mrs. Kaplan, would you like to speak? Or Killeher? Otto Kilcher?
Yeah.
Do you want to speak?
Sure.
Okay.
I want to thank you all for sitting here. I've sat on the Port Harbor Commission for a long time as a chairman, and it can be a really thankless job to sit and try to make decisions without public testimony. You know, I was always appreciative when public came in. I guess all of you might know that my daddy was one of the founders of the Constitution of this state. And ironically, I think the day he died, he He was asked to come to Juneau for a constitutional get-together of the remaining delegates, and he said, "I'm sorry, I can't make it. I'm croaking." But anyway, he looked at me late on in his life and said, "Otto, don't let the bastards take control." You know, what I hear people saying here, and I got to agree with this, is that more and more people are becoming dissatisfied with government, and it's easy. Our governor tends to point at the federal government, but the people are looking at our government as well, city government, borough government. We're suspicious of that. So anytime things start moving in a direction without the public input, part of the reason for becoming a state was we wanted to wrest the resources away from the corporations and the stranglehold of Seattle. So we said this is an only resource state. It is belongs to the people. You work for us through the governor who was elected. You were elected. These people work for us. You need to remember that, and we need to have a voice in that. This should never have come to having to succumb to public pressure. The public input should come first. We need to get away from stopping a snowball that's already rolling, then appear as naysayers in the process. Whoa, we succumbed to the public pressure. Shouldn't have come to that. We should have had the voice to start with. And we need to get away from the fear of what our higher-ups are going to say, what your bosses are going to say. Speak our mind. I hear that, and I'll shut up here just a minute. And I want to remind each of the public servants, you don't work directly for the governor. He is not your boss. The people are the boss. You should not be afraid of dissenting with the governor. Please speak and believe your own minds.
Thank you, Mr. Kilcher.
Thank you.
Ann Weiland, do you want to speak? Okay. Weird went to Mr. Gustafson. I went backward for the names that didn't have a name or yes or no next to him. So Sandy McDaniel.
We have a strong tradition of public input into our decisions, but it's not just a tradition. It is part of our Constitution. And I and many people here have expressed concern about limiting public input to our decisions. One of my concerns, if we have only one period of input for a change, that does not fit with Alaskan lifestyles, because we know that many Alaskans work in seasonal jobs, and if this input time comes when they are in their busy season, they really don't get to make input. And so that's, I think, a strong argument against having a single input opportunity. When you draft a vague statute and are taken to task for it, and you admit that it's vague, and you talk to the intent versus the actual wording of that, I think you leave yourself open to suspicion. This is a legal document, and it should stand up to scrutiny because it's going to be tested in court. And so if there's vagueness in it, it's unworkable. So, in my opinion, maybe taking this bill, breaking it apart, and working it section by section and getting each section precise and workable might be a better solution instead of just crashing the whole thing, or instead of pushing to pass it as it is. Perhaps breaking it apart might be the way to go. My vision as an Alaskan for DNR is to first protect our natural resources and our quality of life, and then our second priority is to develop those resources for our state. So, as an Alaskan, those are my values.
Thank you, Sandy. Next is Rick Harness.
And Seth Tripp is after Rick. If you want to speak, do you want to speak, Seth? Okay, after Mr. Harness will be Richard Olson.
I can't believe I'm standing up here giving testimony on a bill that should have never gotten before. And I know I'm saying taken for the rest of you except for one person.
Okay.
But I just want to encourage everyone that might come up on the list to just come up here and just say you're against this. It's wrong. You don't want to give up your rights for public speaking. Okay? I fought a lot of issues here. I'm not the best speaker, but I know where my heart is, and I know what's right, and I know what's wrong. Okay? I fought for the buyback of the state park. 5 years. Volunteered. Finally, the state bought back the heart of this park that the natives had chose under the Native Land Act. Okay? If we didn't have public speaking, you know, the natives would still have the heart of the park because the state didn't want to buy it. Jet skis. If it wasn't, you know, I went and talked to the commissioner, DNR, and he said, Rick, you get, the backing, the signatures. We will ban jet skis. Well, guess what? If we didn't have public, meetings and testimony, we'd have jet skis out here. And we all know, what kind of a world we'd have out there, with those. So I just encourage everybody, if Pete calls your name, just come up here and just tell him what you feel. If you feel for it, go for it. But if you're against it, do it. Because you know something? This may be in your last meeting. They want to exclude you from public speaking. What the bill says is one thing, but to give it to, the right to the commissioner, and DNR to just say, well, I think I'm going to let jet skis come back in because they don't pollute as much. Well, there's a whole lot more problems with them. Oh, guess what? Let the public mind, just come in and develop, and we don't have to worry about public, testimony because we no longer let them have it. Get up, use your right, please, okay? And I do appreciate all of you being here, okay? And I just want to say that if this goes through and our rights are taken away, then we need to take the rights away from those who took our rights away and vote them out of office and get people in there that have the will of the people in mind. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Next is Sue Mauger. Sir, are you Sue Mauger?
Yeah, I think you jumped one ahead.
I did jump one ahead. Sorry. Welcome, Mr. Olson.
First of all, I got a problem with 24-page bills that are a lot of legal speak that a commoner can't understand. And much more even have a problem with 1,000-page bills and more. And I also have a problem with politicians who pass these bills. And from the get-go, that's a big thing. These big laws of legal speak that the common person can't understand. I read the bill. There's things I don't like. I don't like that we've got restrictions on mandatory appeal times, like 5-day and the 30-day limit. Okay, what if it's the guy who doesn't hear about it, the way you publicize the law, for 6 months down the line, and he finds out this is going to affect him? Oh, he passed the deadline date for making appeal on this bill, and he can't go in there and have something to say about it. And when all our government is natural resources, NDR and the fisheries, Department of Fish and Game. And these are government institutions, and this is a whole lot of people are getting real concerned that too much power is being given over to government in these issues. The too little people being able to have their say in it. Here we're going to appoint a commissioner. We got a one-person judge and jury that's going to, like, make decisions. Well, he's going to make a decision one way or the other. No, sorry. I think we're getting our right taken away from us to speak we got a person who might be subject to pressures from the oil, and the oil is or whatever is fed to him that can pressure him and push him into to a diversion of interest of our interests. I also like to say that well, if you put your hands into the one person, then who's really behind this bill? Who's pushing for this bill? Isn't it the money and the corporations that want this bill passed? I know you know that these are the corporations. These are people down the line who are going to be being able to speak what they think is having to. You know, what's going to be doing something. We're already missing our shrimp, and we're already missing our tin craft disappeared from our bay years ago. And so if we don't have people input...
Mr. Olson, if you can finish that thought.
I'll finish it soon. And one thought I'd like to say is that, you know, there's already a rumor pretty much that, you know, you're an oil puppet, and that if we don't have... If you can kiss your politics in the future goodbye if you don't just drop this bill immediately and just trash it, start over with bills that are
thank you, Mr.
giving rights to the people.
Appreciate your
and the rights of the people testimony. To be able to speak.
One thing I don't respond well to are let me just tell you this. I hear people talk about we had someone last night that challenged whether or not I wanted to be reelected. And I don't do things to be reelected. I'm here because I believe it's what's right. And I make decisions about what I believe is right or wrong in defense of my constituents, which is why I'm here again. So don't respond well to the whole reelection thing, and probably never will. Sue Mauger, please.
Thank you. And Senator Ritchie, I stick with you on the steering committee for the Fish Habitat Partnership, the United Fish Habitat Partnership. And so I feel quite clear in your intent to do your best for fish habitat and for salmon. So so I appreciate you creating this opportunity for us. The intent that I'm concerned about is coming from the language from DNR. And particularly when I look at the stream flow reservations, apparently the tribes and NGOs are being framed as problems, as an obstacle to moving projects forward. And I really have I take issue with that, because these tribes and these NGOs are Alaskans, and so this bill was framed as benefiting Alaskans. Well, I don't see how you can benefit from it if you're also being called a problem. In the in-stream flow reservation language, it's not just, this isn't just a bill about moving forward, it's actually retroactive. So it's actually negating the work that was done for 35 applications. And that to me suggests that this isn't just housekeeping to move forward, but it's actually targeted and strategic related to certain projects, that they're trying to get those applications off the table. And good policy does not come from that kind of thinking. So I do have a lot of concern about the intent. The Fish and Game has taken the stance that they will take those applications on, although the dates will be lost, as well as the standing of the nonprofit or tribe involved in that application. But Fish and Game has a water shop of three people. There's a backlog of hundreds of in-stream flow reservations. I can't even begin to imagine how Fish and Game could actually fulfill what they are offering. with that, I'll let you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mauger. Next on the list is Lori Daniel. And after Lori is Caitlin Vodla.
Thank you, Senator Mushiki, for holding these constituent meetings on House Bill 77 and listening to the people. More than any other state, Alaska is defined by its natural resources, and our state constitution reserves them to the people for common use, providing safeguards protecting the public's interest in these resources. HB 77 greatly reduces Alaskans' ability to participate in the permitting process, and instead it gives the Commissioner of DNR unprecedented power to disregard existing regulations that protect our clean water, fish, and wildlife, and to unilaterally issue permits affecting those resources, including for projects that would create significant harm to said resources. The long-established effective system of checks and balances in natural resources management would be thrown out and superseded by this unprecedented consolidation of power into one single individual. The bill further authorizes DNR to permanently give away state land to private developers and does not require any guarantee of benefit coming back to the state from those projects. The changes to the water rights encompassed by this bill also make the travesty of traditional water rights and uses of protecting aquatic species and habitats and the constrained flow reservations. HB 77 is a broad bill that attempts to undermine our rights to protecting effective natural resource management and conservation statewide. I applaud your standing against this bill, Senator Mushiki, and that genuine representation of your Kenai Peninsula constituents. I ask that you hold firm in your stand against this bill, that you influence your colleagues to the same position, and that you work to prevent this bill from moving through the legislative process. Stop HB 77 now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Caitlin?
Hi, thanks for all being here. I want to make this quick. I stand before you just as a concerned citizen. I grew up in Clam Gulch, and I've been away for school and work for many years and came back because Alaska is better than anywhere I've ever been. And I look forward to a future where our natural resources are developed more thoughtfully than they were anywhere else in the state. And my only comment specifically to this meeting is a question that I hope Randy addresses about a potential blanket rule for all fish-bearing streams to have a water reservation, and if that's a potential solution to some of the fears about household members. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Dadlow. Terry,
sure.
Is there anyone else signed up?
Yeah.
Okay. Before I call this next person, I just want you to know that you have two representatives that represent Homer. One is your senator that has not supported this bill, and the other is your representative who had an opportunity to vote in favor, and of course he didn't. So with that introduction, Representative Paul Seaton. And I don't mind if you all give him a hand.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity for all our constituents to be able to talk with you tonight. I did vote no on this bill for numerous reasons. The issues that you're hearing tonight were raised in House Resources, and the administration refused to take corrective action on all but one of those in House Resources. So this is not a new vetting, and I would hope that the Senate would not just fix one or two of these problems and then pass the bill, but would actually take a very close look at fixing all of the problems. The first one starts with something that we've talked about, notwithstanding other provisions of law that's right in there on general permits that specifically is going to exclude previous bills, previous laws, including Title 16 provisions on general permits. People talk about, our intention, legislative intention. The courts only use legislative intent when the statute is not clear. This statute is clear. We never get to the consideration of legislative intent by looking at testimony that was given in a committee meeting. General permits are on large, or could be, on large geographic areas. That's the only time when the testimony is going to be taken. It could be the entire Cook Inlet Basin. You could be talking about stuff on the west side. When that's applied to your house or the stream that's next to you, there's not going to be any required adjudication of that permit at that time. It's a permitted activity. Could work out well, could work out terribly for people. So I think we very much need to look at that. Temporary water permits, allowing multiple permits and successive permits, means that if a project has a 20-year life, it could easily go through a simplified process for a temporary water permit, get multiple permits for the total length of the process. An appeal can't be given unless
You can finish your thought just like everyone else did.
Well, let me go to my other last thought then, and that is on water reservations. You know, I just cannot understand why the state of Alaska would take the right of tribes applying for water reservations for subsistence purposes, for subsistence fish, and say that a state or federal agency basically would have to stand in their stead, because they're not going to come to the state agencies because we have no legal subsistence relationship with them. They're not going to go to Fish and Game, and they're going to go to the Fish and Wildlife Service. So the Fish and Wildlife Service, the feds, are going to come in and get water reservations for fish in our streams that we should be managing. And why would we be abdicating that to the federal government for management of fish and water in our streams that we should be controlling is just beyond me. So I encourage you to look at all of the provisions of the bill and encourage the senators to, you know, if this bill is going to go forward, rewrite all of the rules. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. The next is Mr. Doug Reed. And after Mr. Reed is Phil Gordon.
After quickly reading the bill and everything, but one of the main issues I have with it is that it just puts too much power in one person's hands. You know, that should be, I guess, a public process. Any one person shouldn't have that much, you know, especially a politically appointed person. The other thing is that this time of declining state revenues, it might be in the state's best financial interest to really start over this bill, or even just forget this one, because it will wind up in court. It's going to get expensive. You know, so that's something that should be considered. I mean, it's certain now, with the obvious problems people have with it, it's more than likely it will wind up in court.
Thank you, Mr. Reed. The last person we have signed up is Mr. Gordon. You get the last word, at least for the panel.
Sadly, it could have been the best, we'll say, for the last pitch. That's what
I meant, Mr. Gordon.
There are several ways of looking at this bill, of course, one of them being that it is a simple solution to a multiplicity of inefficiencies in resource extraction. But of course, Alaska is more than just resource development. So my one simple objection to Bill 77 is that it is right looking at the whole basis of democracy. Democracy being generally kind of emphasizing citizen involvement inefficient. This will reduce citizen involvement, in my view. Thank you
very much, Mr. Gordon. With that, is there anyone? Did you want to testify?
I'll take my 2 minutes, yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Provong, things. I appreciate people being here, but.
Mr., could you identify yourself?
My name is Bob Shableson. I'm the executive director of Quicken Lakekeeper, and I really appreciate seeing so many folks. I know it's a little erosion here, but it was a great turnout. So the one thing that I heard Chris Gutson talk about was the coastal management program. I mean, we talked a lot about that tonight. But if there's a mistrust kind of circulating around this, I think it's because we had a wonderful efficiency tool for permitting in our state, and it was called the coastal management program, and it got thrown under the bus. And there's a lot of reasons, but generally, my perspective is that program went away because it gave citizens too much of a role in our coastal decision making. And I think that was unfortunate. I'd like to see it come back very much, and I hope that can be part of the dialogue that we have with HB 77. But one of the things that the Coastal Management Program did when a developer came in and wanted to develop a project, they would fill out a questionnaire. And so that questionnaire then enabled the local, the state, and the federal agencies to all come together and work in a coordinated fashion. It did something else. It allowed the public to see permits that we don't see right now. And there's a couple different authorizations that I think are vitally important. One is the temporary water use permit that you see now that can be a significant amount of water for 5 years, to still would extend that for an indefinite amount of time. But the other thing is what are called Title 16 permits. And these are the permits to impact fish habitat. Okay? We don't get public notice for projects that impact our habitat. We asked the Department of Fish and Game, could we have that public notice? The response was, no, it would be too burdensome. Because right now, the average time for those permits, and there's hundreds every year, would be as 7 days is the average time for considering a Title 16 permit. So I hope that public notice on water use and habitat impacts can be part of the discussion as we move forward, and that would be my recommendation. But thank you for enduring that.
Thank you, Mr. Shableton. Okay, what we did in the other meeting and what we'll do now is come back to the panel first to non-agency panel members, just to talk about some things you heard tonight or you learned last night. You were both there in Soldotna last night, and kind of do a few minute wrap up, and then we'll go back to DNR and ADF and G for their final comments, and then I've got a couple myself from what I learned over the last couple of nights. So, Mr. Ruffner.
Sure. So again, part of what I heard was, you know, concern from people. As the concerns came out, I don't know if people knew who to direct them to in the tone and the manner of which they were delivered. So I guess I'd take some of my closing comments just to reiterate that, you know, Senator Machicki did do a, from my perspective, an admirable job of stopping or not allowing this thing to go further when it was in the committee. And to revisit this and bring this back. So I do very much appreciate that. And at the same time, I'll use this to say, you know, a little bit of a reality check, and I'll close with the same thing that I said last night, is that, you know, I'm hopeful that we can work on this, whether it's throwing it all out or starting over or making some changes in a way that would be much more palatable to the public based on what we've heard here. The reality is that this thing is just a couple of votes away from being passed. I don't know what's going to happen when it goes back. The people that are sitting here don't have the control necessarily of what's going to happen with the legislative body, but I'm hopeful that this testimony and the effort that went in here to get some more public input will go back, and that there will be a serious rethinking and retooling of this, and not a, oh my God, there's a big outcry. We need those two votes really bad. Let's figure out a way to push that through. So those are kind of two extreme end members, I guess, from the continuum of what might happen. And I certainly hope that we're more on the side of sitting down and trying to work this out a little bit more thoroughly than what we have right now. That's it for my closing comments. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Upner. Mr. Shavelson.
It was.
I think you turned it on.
Okay. It was very valuable that be in attendance last night and tonight, and I guess one of the common threads that I would take away is there is a pervasive mistrust, and I think it's well placed because this legislation was pushed through. We did see the Commissioner of Natural Resources at that time, Dan Sullivan, actively pushing this and in a fairly aggressive manner. And that's probably why I think it raced through the House so quickly, which will be little consideration. So I hope this sends a signal to the administration that if there's going to be such sweeping changes, that we would have the discussion beforehand. The lessons there, we recognize that we're the owners of the resource and that we don't have this cart before the horse problem again. With that, I really want to thank Senator Michiki for having these meetings. Senator Michiki and I have different opinions on a number of things. Sometimes we strongly differ, but I've been very impressed with his willingness to engage and have an open mind and conversation and dialogue on this. And nowhere else have these types of hearings been held except at Mr. Senator Michiki's initiative. So I just want to say thank you for that very much.
Well, I'd just like to thank everyone for taking this long 3 hours and 45 minutes to sit through all this. I want to thank the Senator for this opportunity and the opportunity last night. I think there's really valuable opportunities, a lot of good information, we've heard a lot here. As I started off, we're looking to solve problems. There are many ways to solve these problems. We've got a lot of information here. We're going to take it all back and report it up to the governor and work with the legislators. Really look forward to doing that. I do want to take exception to one comment I heard tonight, and that is that we're not listening. That is just simply not true. I've spent all my professional career listening, holding public meetings, and it's the one thing I can assure you that you've heard what you're saying, and I'm going to brief it on up. So, again, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Senator. Well, thank you again for taking the time to come out and visit with us. There are some obvious and important central themes that I have heard. I know Ed has heard them last night as well as tonight. Senator Michiki is making his list. Certainly Ed and I will get together, and as he mentioned, we'll brief the governor and move forward. There is a process that House Bill 77 went through to get to this point, and there is a process ahead for House Bill 77. It's not done. There is, Senator Michiki mentioned earlier where it is in the Senate, and there's movement possible there. So stay tuned. Obviously, there's more to come on this. Appreciate Senator Michiki arranging this and certainly inviting the Department of Fish and Game to come down, and it's certainly nice to be here in Homer. So thank you very much.
I want to thank all of you for being here, which is the most important part of this meeting. Also, I want you to notice a couple of things. I want you to notice that we don't just have folks from the administration here. We also have panelists, frankly, one of which has a reputation of being somewhat difficult.
In a good way.
In a good way. I could only mean that in a way. But there's a specific reason for that, and that is because we do want open and frank discussion from folks that ask the most difficult questions. I think it's imperative. I heard a lot of things the last couple of days. One of them is limiting general permits to smaller projects. I think it's imperative that we define those sideboards.
I think the most important issue is that people feel that there's an insurance policy, that there's adequate in-street water flows for anadromous streams. I think it's important that notwithstanding any other provision of law is isolated to protect ADF&G from continue to be able to use Title 16 to protect streams. I know there are standings issues that we heard from many different groups. I personally favor legislation. I heard this concept. We actually have a draft bill measuring a standard of past performance and sustainability philosophy in a corporation that wants to do business in Alaska. I think that's imperative. I heard from a few folks tonight that I will mention by name, and these statements really struck me. Ms. Lois and Galen Lyon and Mr. Gordon. Louise, I'm sorry. Is Louise still here? No. When Louise said that it feels like the individual has become an obstacle, that was an important statement to me. And I think it's something we need to think about. Mr. Kilcher, I do work for you. And I will always view myself as your public servant. And I think there are folks in this room, some I've known for a very long time, that if they ever behave differently, will know that I've got a collar to grab and will straighten me out pretty quickly. But I hope you don't ever have to accuse me of not working for you. Ms. McDaniel, you talked about a constitutional standard. I think that's a very important focus. I also like the fact that some folks said that NGOs are Alaskans too. Too. Some of them are. I think the ones that are should be treated with the utmost respect of every Alaskan. For those that aren't, I think unfortunately they have to take a back seat to Alaskan NGOs. And a very important piece of this discussion, I probably heard, I had some little chip marks up here, but probably heard it 12 times tonight, was how we could have gotten this far without having a public discussion. And I think that's imperative. I think we do have to get out. It's not necessarily how the process has to work. It may not be the most efficient, but I think it delivers a better product. I think we could have heard a lot of these issues, and I think they could have been better designed into anything that would make permitting more efficient, yet more efficient without skipping the steps that make Alaskans feel important. So I asked this the other night, has everyone here that wanted to be heard been heard at least once? Did I miss you? That's okay. You can be late. You can still have your 2 minutes if you want to come up. Just come up and state your name and affiliation for the record.
Affiliation.
Oh, name's good enough. Terry, if you can please record her name. Well, it's on the recording, so it's okay. Okay.
My name is Megan Murphy, and I just wanted to go up here to say that I don't support the House Bill 77. And that just hearing, unfortunately, only your closing comments as a panel, definitely have distrust. And as far as how we got this far without public comment, it seems like that is on purpose. And yeah, it's just amazing to think that efficiency for permitting is, it's just frightening to think about DNR and other state agencies trying to, do away with the words like conservation and, providing perpetual resources for generations to come. Short-term benefits, totally disregarding long-term
It does seem like it's on purpose to not incorporate public and individual input into these processes, and that truly scares me as a resident of the state. That's my second. Thanks for letting me say my.
Can I get your name one more time for the
Megan Murphy.
Megan Murphy. Thank you, Megan. Anyone else?
Yes.
Come on up, sir. I'm sorry. For anyone that hasn't testified yet.
I didn't get a chance to make my closing.
Yeah, next panel. Megan Murphy.
Megan Murphy.
And if you can state your name, please.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my name is Zach Curry. And one thing I heard tonight was really striking. And one of the main things that I noticed about the bill was the erosion of democracy that I saw in this bill. And at first reading it, I was in disbelief and saying, is this real? You know, am I really reading this correctly? And that was one of the things that was really striking to me. And these meetings are really important for our voices to be heard because we're the basis of democracy. You know, public input, citizen involvement is crucial. That is democracy. And so I'm really grateful that we have this opportunity now, and I look forward to seeing this continue in the future. And thank you all for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Fairbanks. Anyone else who has not spoken yet that would like to speak?
My name is Jeff Middleton, and I've been here 65 years, and I too oppose House Bill 77. I was thinking that somewhere in high school in government class or history class or something, I heard the statement, government is by the people, for the people. And this bill seems to be direct contradiction of that. And I did one more thing, just generally. Most of the people here have been really respectful, and I got to say that I don't agree with Senator Machicki on a lot of things, but he did pull this meeting together, and he tried to run it efficiently and orderly. And I got to say there was a couple of people that weren't respectful, and you know this isn't a place for personal attacks or. And the only way we can come together with everybody with different beliefs is to be respectful. And I got to say, 99% of people were, but I just like to apologize for the two or three that weren't. So.
You're talking about
is there anyone else that hasn't addressed the crowd that would like to speak? Okay. I would like to thank... Oh, did you have your hand up and I didn't notice it?
No, I put it up at the left.
Okay, if you can state your name for the record, too, please.
Yeah, hi. My name is Kim McNett, and I just want to say that I oppose this bill, and on the general principle of that it would potentially undermine our intact ecosystems, and those ecosystems are not going to just be spared if we can afford it. There are life support systems, and it's only a matter of time if we continue to degrade them that it will come back, and it will be very, very costly. So I oppose this one.
Thank you, Kim. Okay, I would like to thank everyone for coming. I'd like to thank Alaska Islands and Ocean Visitor Center. One Ocean, right?
One Ocean.
People often say islands and oceans.
Deputy Commissioner Ed Fogles, Director of ADF&G Habitat Division,
Randy Bates, David Shady, and Esther Temple. I'd like to repeat, they don't have to be here.
They are here
in our district.
They were down on the southern end tonight. They were on the northern end last night.
They didn't have to be here, and they are. I very much appreciated that you're here to listen. I know I personally appreciate it, and I hope my constituents appreciate it. I also very much want to thank Robert Ruffner and Bob Shavelson for participating. Lindsey Bloom participated last night as well in our panel.
And I think we had some great questions, some very good dialogue, and I think the results are very positive. So let's see where this goes, and you all know where to find me. You can always contact me at the office here. Again, thanks, Terry Roble, my staff, for being here tonight. And we'll be around for a few minutes. But thank you very, very much for coming.
Well done.
All right, so we'll see you at breakfast at 7 a.m.
7.
Excuse me.
So, his time's up.
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah.